Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Good. We can finally start the big meeting. Donnie, Chuck.
Let's begin, shall we? Shall we?
This box contains over 217 bits and pieces of information. Evidence. Exhibit A, a photograph of the victims, my bike, and me. Exhibit B, another photograph.
What's missing from this picture? It's just me, without my bike!
Is this something you could share with the rest of us, Amazing Larry? Exhibit C, the horn I was picking up
at Chuck's Bike-O-Rama
when my bike was actually stolen. Exhibit D, Jimmy.
What is this? Too late.
Chip.
Looks like a pen.
Exactly. I bought this pen 1 hour before my bike was stolen.
Why? What's the significance? I don't know!
Exhibit Q!
A scale model of the entire mall!
X marks the scene of the crime. These arrows here show the exact position of the sun and the hour of the crime.
Jupiter was aligned with Pluto! The moon was in the sun! Please save your questions until I'm through, Chuck!
Well, when will that be? A long time we wait. We've been here for over 3 hours now, and I'm not sure if any of us can see what all this is supposed to mean.
Supposed to mean?
Supposed to mean?
I think everyone here knows what this is supposed to mean.
Shall we talk about? It is improbably 32 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of January. It's amazing how time flies, isn't it, Dawn?
You still look a little sleepy.
No, it's a funny thing about this morning. In fact, I very nearly on the not that I would ever use my my mobile phone while I'm driving, because that's wrong. It's illegal, and it's a thing you shouldn't do,
right.
and it jeopardizes the safety of others. But very nearly this morning, while I was sitting at a red light, waiting to, just moments ago it seems, just waiting to come here to the studio, I was trying to figure out exactly what this is. Really, the kind of this is the kind of problem that we deal with now in 2010. Sitting at a red light or at a stop sign, trying to figure out what informative yet snarky message I can fit into 140 characters with one hand, while also waiting for the red light to turn green so that I can get to the studio in time to at least do this program today, while also looking for cops, while also trying to juggle the incoming like text messages and phone calls from like 700 other people who are going, well, that's strange. There doesn't seem to have been any Legion of News this morning. Whatever could be the case, which, of course, even now, now, and I guess it's not 2011. People automatically go, well, I wonder if you've been fired somehow. So, you know, and it's not like it's out of the question that would somehow occur. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, January 6th, 2011, and welcome to Day 12. Thank you for coming by. First things first. So, yes, if you were listening to Legion of News or, you know, a quasi-Legion, Legion of Olds a while back, and by a while back, I mean, you know, like 90 minutes ago, you may have noticed that we weren't here. And by not here, I mean Dawn was here. And by here, I mean sitting in that chair.
Yeah.
By here, broadcasting, less so. Not so much.
Yeah, it's really driving home the fact that I need to learn how to work all the buttons and the
knobs. Oh, that wouldn't have helped you.
Sure it would have.
No, you would have been lost. You would have been bereft.
You would have been...
There would have been nothing you could do, Don.
You I would have been just sad, been, but I could have still, you know, given
whistled
the news
for a while.
Given the news to the people.
Could have snapped your fingers jauntily and had everyone share knock-knock jokes with you.
I'd read a story and then say... And if Rick was here, he might say...
This is exactly what he would say. You could create a Rick bot, you know, just as we used to have the news bot.
Here's the thing. One of the reasons I am in such a chipper and happy mood is because through just a wacky confluence of events, I ended up coming in without a working cell phone today. And so when you weren't here, my first thought was... Oh, God, Rick is like caught in traffic or something, and he can't call me. And then I started thinking, then it got later and later, and I started thinking, oh, God, perhaps Rick is dead.
Really? You went right to dead?
Well.
Not like, you know, he's ill somehow, or he's stuck on the other side of town.
Possibly.
He's in Beaverton. His alarm didn't go off.
Maybe you were in the hospital.
Why did you go right to dead?
Because you are the kind of person that I... Because
you didn't say just now, you didn't say unconscious, you didn't say maybe unable to communicate in some way, you didn't say maybe he's had a palsy overtake him. You just went to, he's no longer alive.
That's just where I go. That's just okay. Where my brain goes. But I'm thinking,
you're
you
already
know.
Angling how to... Was this just because you were trying to figure out exactly then where your name would move to in the title of the show, or...
Well, what happened was I figured you were probably not dead, but I figured you had probably just gotten held up somehow. But my first thought, of course, being that you got held up somehow and you couldn't get a hold of me, so you were just, like, incredibly mad at me. I could just imagine you being just furious at me because you couldn't get a hold of me to tell me that you were, like, running late or something. And then when time just got later and later, it was like, maybe he's not mad at me because maybe he's dead. But...
So these are the only two options that exist in your head if I'm late for the show, is that I'm somewhere seething at you because I'm not here.
Right.
Or I am no longer breathing.
Those were the first two.
That I have, in fact, started to decay in a hole somewhere.
Well, and then I thought, then I went on to the Cascadia website, and there was no schedule listed for today.
And then you went right to fire.
So I thought maybe they're off the air today, and no one told me.
Oh, well, that's not...
And Rick knew, so he just didn't come.
See, now, that is not so much of an unreasonable explanation, less because of Cascadia, but just because of the same reason that everybody leaps to the assumption of, has he been fired somehow? Because that's just the sort of thing that does happen to you at any sort of a job,
yeah.
Right? Where it's like, everybody else...
They're down for maintenance today, but nobody bothered to tell me.
It's
somehow.
Like when there's a parent-teacher conference, but somehow you forget about it, or you don't get the message home, or when it's picture day, and somehow you weren't privy to that information, and everybody else shows up with a hairbrush, and you have forgotten yours.
So then, of course, then I email Sabrina, and I tell her, and Robert, and I said, here's what's going on.
Rick's dead.
Here's all I know. And I'm sorry if we hung you out to dry, or maybe there's no show today and no one told me, but if so, I apologize and I don't know what's going on and I'll let you know later. And then Sabrina got back to me and said, okay, great, but you should talk to Cheryl because Cheryl couldn't get a hold of either of you and she's really worried. So then I finally talked to her, and then finally I called your wife because I borrowed Donna's cell phone and now Donna's worried too.
Now wait a minute, let's
Donna's
back up for a
thinking
second.
You're
Why
dying.
Why don't you have your phone today?
That's beside the point.
No, it's not. No,
that story is
No. But I want to know. That's the thing because again, like of all of the days.
Yes, I know.
And let me also say this. So not only do you not have your phone today, but for some reason, and I'm beginning to think it is that chair, your Wi-Fi isn't working, and. You know, Eric was here yesterday, Eric D. Snyder, and everybody in the building, like, their Wi-Fi was functioning fine. And in fact, my iPhone is fine. His iPad couldn't get on the net yesterday. So not only do you, of all days, not have your cell phone this morning, so Cheryl is just sitting there thinking, Cheryl probably just thought we were both dead.
Yeah.
And then wondering how her name could go into the title of the show. And then also your Wi-Fi isn't working.
Right. So I had to go over and use the one of the server computers to email.
Okay. That explains why everything was all wonky over here. Okay. So what is the...
I opened Safari and used Gmail. How did that make everything wonky?
Okay. Don't project frustration about one thing onto something else. So you didn't have your phone this morning and you don't have any Wi-Fi.
Right.
So Cheryl, of all mornings, can't actually find you or me.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah. So I borrowed Donna's cell phone. Donna downstairs. And now Donna's worried. I hope Rick's okay. She's all fretting.
I hope he's not dead. The rent is due.
and so finally, I thought, I'm just going to call Laura because maybe Laura knows. Or if he's been in a car accident.
Now, how did you have her number, though? Because if your cell phone isn't here.
Because, oh, God. Because the iPhone is out of commission for the moment. And so, but I still have the throwaway, like, Virgin
mobile phone. You kept your drug dealer phone with
you. I still have my drug dealer phone. But the thing is, so I charged that up this morning and took it with me in case of emergency. And here was an emergency, so I went to use it. So I call you on that phone, and I get a message. This is Virgin Mobile. You don't have any minutes left. You can't use this. I'm like, damn it!
Awesome.
So then I borrowed Donna's phone and I tried to call. But yes, but I have numbers still loaded on the drug dealer phone, and your wife's phone number.
We should probably not call it a drug dealer.
No, it's not. It's a Virgin Mobile pay as you go phone. It's a perfectly acceptable and respectable phone. So, but I realized I have Laura's number. I'll call her. So yeah, and then she immediately was like, "Oh, I talked to Cheryl, and we have this elderly neighbor across the street, and she said the car is still in the driveway, so she's going across the street." He probably just overslept.
Yeah.
And then she goes, "I'm going to Kennewick tonight, and I'm so glad because he's going to be livid when he realizes what he did."
Yeah, well, so this is how my...
So your poor wife is like going, "I'm so glad I'm leaving town because he's going to take it out on me."
So this is, as I always do. You know, the thing about it is, those doors at home get angry sometimes. And there's no telling what the doors might do or who the doors might choose to focus their anger on.
Do you have one of those houses where there's lots of holes in the walls from Mr. Fist?
That's right. By the way, this is all for satiric. It's not really a drug dealer phone, and I don't really have angry doors at home, to the best of anyone's knowledge. So this is how my morning, and by morning I mean afternoon, started. So actually, it's sort of like an episode of your favorite television drama, where it starts with me just lurching through the kitchen. You know, and I'm all unshaved, and as you said, I just look a little wonky at the moment.
You look a little bleary.
Yeah, and just sort of, you know, just kind of going, you know, and I guess if it was. If this were like an episode of CSI Kalamazoo or whatever, it would start with me, except that would be played by John C. McGinley, and I would be like stumbling through a pile of beer cans or something, and from the carnage of the night before, and then it would immediately cut to black, and the screen would say 9 hours earlier, you know, and it would be, "I'll just have one beer," so it's like that without anything interesting or debauched. The explanation is just really, really... It is a confluence of two really stupid, simple things. One is that I either... And I know... And just let me preemptively say right now, you bastards, this has nothing to do with, like, the... I know I'm going to get a whole bunch of, like, "Well, if you didn't have an iPhone, maybe your alarm would have worked." So this... It has nothing to do with that. Because it was clearly one of those mornings where... And this happens to me, I guess, like every now and again. I don't know if you do this, where it's... Do you have a regular alarm clock, or do you use a phone or something?
I use both, depending on circumstances. Usually just the regular alarm clock.
When you're using a phone, though, or like a mobile alarm clock, do you ever have this where you wake up, and maybe you've overslept, maybe you haven't, but you look, and it's the alarm has been moved, and so it is like prima facie evidence that the alarm went off, you did hear it, you did get up, you did deal with it in some way, and then you set it back down somewhere else, but you have no recollection of it.
No. See, yeah. I don't do that.
Yeah, see, apart from the whole issue of whether I get up on time or not, that is a thing that I will do occasionally, where it's you sort of looking and you go, "Well, that's funny." Because, of course, you know, I put the alarm in the same place, I put the phone in the same place every single night before I go to bed. And I wake up, you know, and it's somewhere else this morning, and I thought, Well, that's odd. So that means that at some point, which really is where you get the whole, you know, you understand from it the thing about sleepwalking and sleep driving, and because the phone was like in some totally different place. It was like in the closet or something. I'm like, well, that's odd. So that means that I got up, turned off the alarm, or set it for later, and then didn't hear it, whatever, and then just set it like, you know, over here by like my pants, and then just went back to sleep and have no recollection of it whatsoever. So there's that. So that is thing the first. Thing the second is that, you know, and at like 30, whatever, nearly 30, 38 years of age, you would think that I would know this, that I made that fatal mistake last night of just thinking that I would get a normal amount of sleep. And so I went to bed at like 1:30, which, you know, and how many times, I mean, just like since we've been doing the show, how many times have I said to myself, you know, like, and to you, that the key is that I can't try to sleep like a normal amount that everybody says, because then it just Fs me. Then it just my brain completely turns to oatmeal. So I thought, well, I could just, in fact, Laura and I just had this conversation yesterday afternoon. Well, we were talking about, because when I come to bed, I do that thing, you know, like I try to be really, 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 you know, quiet and silent because she gets up early and she's, you know, she has a different, you know, work schedule than I do. But then it's like there's always, like one of the dogs will hear me come in and they'll be, you know, and they'll you know, and then, you know, Phyla will start, you know, whining or, you know, chattering and making some weird noise. So I've been trying to figure out exactly the right time to come to bed so that I do not wake her up and just completely, like, destroy her REM cycle. And I noted that, you know, really the only two solutions are for her to go to bed really, really late so that even if I do completely screw up her sleep schedule, she's already gotten a lot of rest, or to go to bed really, really early. But that I can't go to bed really early because if I try to get anything more than like 5 or 6 hours, then it's like my brain just goes haywire. So having had that discussion with her yesterday afternoon, what do I do last night? I then just completely, like a retard, disregard what I just said to her. And I say, I'll go to bed really early. So I go to bed at like 1 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning. And so when did I wake up? 1:02 p.m. So there you go.
Maybe there's something going on because you just had that thing last weekend, didn't you, where you slept like 29 hours?
Yeah, 21 hours. Well, 29 out of 36, but only 21 in a row, Dawn. The rest were scattered throughout the weekend.
Yeah, so, the rest were gravy.
Yeah, the rest were deleted scenes, which I enjoyed later. So, and then on the way here, I was doing that thing, and I'm not nearly so mental about this as I used to be. Like when Laura said that I'm going to be livid about, you know, oversleeping and, you know, missing the show or whatever. I don't get nearly so twisted up about that, but I do. But it is that thing about trying to calculate how many times I've done that, and I can tell you that this is now in, so I'm 37, nearly 38, so in 20, let's round up and we'll say in 24 years of broadcasting. So this is the fourth time that I have overslept and missed all or part of a show. I never missed all of a show. This is the fourth time that I've missed. If you consider this and Legion of News to be one, like, block of broadcasting, so this is the fourth time. So I am on a once every 8 year average. So when 2019 comes around, you will want to be setting a double alarm of some kind, or learning how to operate one or both of these machines to my left.
Yeah, I think I need to. Well, I should do that anyway. But yes, I need.
Or just
to learn.
Learning how to call Thomas Gill. Let's be honest.
All the stuff.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program, and good afternoon to you. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us. If you'd just like to engage in taunting or mockery, or if you'd like to pour scorn and derision on me this morning, you can do that. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com.
Don't bother emailing me during the show, though, because I can't read it right now.
So the Wi-Fi is just not working.
No, apparently the Wi-Fi is not working. We are obviously connected to the internet.
And my Wi-Fi is fine. And I just checked my phone, and the Wi-Fi on my phone is working properly.
And I had the Wi-Fi at home. Then I got here, and I can't connect to the internet.
All right. Well, that is sort of odd. And I just said this earlier, but I was sitting sort of a goof. But maybe it's. Have you considered that?
Maybe it's that giant steel pumpkin.
By the way, Eric and Clackamas wants you to know that his Wi-Fi is functioning fine.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Eric.
Seriously, though, have you considered the fact, I mean, is it possible that it is, I don't mean that chair as such, but that spot in the studio?
It could be. I mean,
because that would explain why you and Eric are, you were the two people in the last 2 days that haven't been able to work.
Of course, it was working when I was here day before yesterday.
All right. I have...
So I don't know.
As Meg Ryan would say, I have no response to that. Hey, how was your yesterday?
My yesterday was really, really both stressful and boring at the same time. It was basically just I listened to the show. I took Patrick to the hospital. We sat around and listened to the show at the hospital.
And I beat you to the phrase Juggalo Jim.
You did.
By the way. Which, can I just say this? Can I tell you how many times last night I went back, because we were talking about this story with Huck Finn, with Mark Twain's Huck Finn, and how they're going to take out the, you know, the N-word and they're going to replace it with slave, which is that better, apparently.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to think of different words that you could use to as an, you know, as an adjunct, as an ancillary to Jim. And immediately I said Juggalo, and then I looked on the screen and you had typed it, and we were off by like 3 seconds. But I spent all night last night, about every 2 minutes I would just stop and ponder that for a moment and think that... And just think of, you know, how unbelievably, horribly offensive Juggalo Jim sounds. It just sounds like, it sounds like the worst slur.
It does.
Yeah, I think it's because it's linguistically...
Juggalo Jim.
Well, and it's linguistically similar to some words that you wouldn't want to say.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's not those words. It's Juggalo. And so then there's like a whole extra layer of great and horrible to it. So I've decided I'm going to roll that out every now and again. But I probably won't say Jim. Like, it'll be a thing I say... Like mockingly. So, you know, like you say, well, look at Mr. Fancy Pants. You'd say, well, look at Juggalo John over there with his brand new shiny blah, blah, blah. And just, I'm going to throw it out in the conversation every now and again and just sort of see if it takes hold.
I'm going to start using it as an exclamation. Like, holy Juggalo.
Juggalo like Jim, Batman.
Juggalo. You know, for no good reason. But the most entertaining thing that happened actually yesterday was just that after Patrick had his procedure.
How did that go, by the way? He's not full of cancer or something.
No, not that we know of. Again, you know, this is the thing I've learned from, like, the last few weeks of Patrick being sick, is that if there's anything wrong with your body, and let's face it, the human body is just a big stupid meat sack. And if there's anything they can't just immediately figure out why it's happening...
They're never going
to
figure it out.
They just go to cancer.
Yeah.
They just tell you it might be cancer.
Well, that's
and then they look for cancer, and then they don't find cancer there.
You know,
then they look for cancer someplace else.
Here's what cancer is. Cancer is the, sort of, have you tried powering down the machine and turning it back on of healthcare? But that's it. It's like when the guy tells you to unplug your crap and plug it back in. Cancer, they just assume... Because, you know, why not just jump to the worst case scenario? Because if it's anything less than that, then it's one in the win column.
Yeah. So he's got, apparently he has a narrowing in one of the bile ducts in his liver. It's just the little passageway is narrow.
Is it because it's clogged with something?
No, that's what they thought it might be, and that's why they went and looked, but they didn't see any tumors or anything. It could just be because things were inflamed in there and it, you know, pushed against it or something. He did say he took, I said on Facebook, I said that the guy said he took scrapings. But that wasn't what he said, actually.
Wow.
I realized later what he said was he took brushings.
Okay.
Because the little tiny scope that they run down your throat and then up into your liver, I guess there's a little brush attachment that can, like, scrape the walls so that you have to biopsy. So you have cells that they can look at. So by the end of the week, we'll know, you know, because God knows they're going to try and find cancer someplace.
Well, and that's just one of those things where it's like and I finally, by the way, I am now done. I have finished season 6 of House. I finished season 6 and I watched the first episode of season 7 just because they ended on a little bit of a cliffhanger with him and Cuddy. And so I just wanted to get that done so I didn't have to, like, what happens next season? So as I watched the first episode of season 7 and now I'm done until, you know, for the next several weeks, at least until the season wraps. But now, because of House, every time they talk about something with Patrick, do you do like a crude CGI thing where you dive into his body and like you're navigating through his bloodstream?
Yes.
And then it goes to his heart, which is going boom, 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 boom. And then like a some group of cells explode and then are carried away down his bloodstream to cause havoc somewhere else.
And it zooms back out and he's just like gushing blood from his eyes.
He's like falling over in a bowling alley.
Yeah.
So he's going, Patrick, my God, get a doctor.
They just like, wait, I feel damp. And they pull back the covers and his bed is just full of blood that's
full of pus
coming out of something somewhere. Now, the thing was that was amusing to me is that he came out of the anesthesia and they told him it's like, oh, you're going to be kind of, you know, tired for a while. They said, in addition to the normal anesthesia, we also gave you Benadryl. And now I thought, okay, they gave him some Benadryl. But then I thought about it and I realized, no, we're in the hospital and they were knocking him out. So I thought, I know how loopy I get from just taking a Benadryl because I'm sneezing. I wonder how, I forgot to ask before I left, how much Benadryl they give you
right.
if they're knocking you unconscious and they're giving it to you intravenously. Because he came out of the stuff and I took him home. His signature on the release form
just
is
a line.
Hilarious. It's like a cartoon. It's like rah, all over the place. He woke up. He remembers nothing until like later. He doesn't remember waking up in the hospital. He doesn't remember going home. He doesn't remember anything until later when he was on the couch. Because I got him into the car. I took him home. He slept all night just laying on the couch. But I talked to him this morning because he went to work this morning. He's fine this morning. We talked about it, and I said, no, yeah. He's like, doesn't remember anything in the hospital. And I was going, yeah, you woke up. You wanted to hold my hand, so I held your hand. I had been, they have this thing out in the waiting room at the hospital where they have coffee, a nice coffee machine. And they have a lovely little elderly volunteer woman who keeps refilling a basket full of cookies. And so I was eating cookies. And I had a cookie left, and I ate the cookie. And Patrick's looking over at me for the hospital. He goes, what are you eating? And I said, a cookie? And he looked so sad. And he went, oh. And I said, well, you can't have any solid food yet. And he went, oh. And he looked like he was going to cry.
So it just reduced him to an infant state.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just some massive dose of Benadryl that they jacked into
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It's like that is one of those things where when you buy it over the counter, you're good. And Benadryl is the same thing to me, by the way. That's one of those. There was some study, actually. There was some article in USA Today a couple years ago where they did some study where they figured out that if you took, like, whatever. Like, and this is just like the regular Fred Meyer Benadryl. Like, you just go and get it off the shelf. The over-the-counter Benadryl, if you follow the directions on the backwards, it's like two adults, you know, or two tablets for adults every 12 hours. That it was like drinking four beers or something if you tried to drive.
If I take one of those at night, I sleep great, but I have so much trouble getting up in
the next morning.
I'm so hungover from Benadryl.
And that's the watered-down dose. Like, that's
yeah.
the consumer dose. So you figure, like, at the hospital, you get, like, the full-on, like, the super Benadryl, which probably just puts you into a coma.
Probably the equivalent of, like, 8 or 10 Benadryl. And it's going straight into your veins.
It's because they're just jacking it into your... Because that's, like, the diphenhydramine stuff, which... Back when I was, I don't know, like 18, 19 or whatever, and I would just work these insane shifts where I would do like, you know, I would do like six on and six off for like 7 days or something. And I would get to the end of it and I would try to regulate my sleep cycle a little bit, which as you might have noticed this morning can be challenging.
Mm.
And I would, you know, and I would take diphenhydramine, which is like Benadryl or Sominex or whatever. And I had to quit taking it because back then was when I first learned that it was better for me just to have no sleep than to get the wrong kind of sleep or too much, because you would take that and it was like, the next morning it was like your veins were full of liquid concrete. It was like they were just full of sludgy sand. You're like,
yeah.
I can't stand.
Yeah, I have the same problem. Sometimes if I take the trazodone
yeah.
that I was prescribed, which you know, I'll take it if I'm feeling really jacked up and anxious, and I'm not able to sleep.
Right.
And so I'll take it to sleep, and it's like it helps. It really does help. But the next morning, it's that thing of just like, I don't want to get up.
You're gonna hit with a trank dart.
And Patrick's yeah. going, no, you really have to get out of bed now. And I'm like, really, I think I just need about 45 more minutes. And that he's like, no, really, you have to get out of bed. I'm like. No!
It's like someone
horrible.
Has disconnected all the cables in your body, you know? And it's like you're trying to get your muscles to work, but it's just a bunch of slack wire inside. Just nothing. It's like you're a marionette yeah. with your strings cut.
And there's this part of your brain that knows if I get up and get dressed...
It'll be better.
...and drink coffee, it will go away,
yeah.
and I'll feel better. But the thing is, while you're in it, all you can think of is, I just want more sleep now. That's all you can think.
I was actually thinking about this maybe not yesterday or a couple days ago. I was actually... I woke up and I woke up like 8 a.m. or something. And it was that thing about, you know, like I didn't go back to sleep, but I just laid in bed for a while, just sort of not asleep, not up. I mean, I was awake, but I was just laying in bed, just sort of staring blankly at a wall. And I was like, I don't really want to get up. And I sat there for like 10 or 12 minutes, sort of just thinking how much I didn't want to get up. And then I got locked in this whole like weird rabbit hole in my head of thinking, like one of those like late night dorm room stoned, you know, trains of thought where you're wondering why things are. And I was thinking, well, I'm not sleeping. I'm sitting here in bed, awake. I am not asleep. I am fully conscious. And yet the idea of getting up is just horrible to me. But but I'm already awake. I mean, it's okay. Granted, I'm laying down, but that's really not that much different than sitting. Like, I could get up and go sit in my chair in the office, but that just sounds like the worst thing on earth. What is the difference? I'm awake. Why the extra step of getting out of bed? Why does it seem so horrible? And I think it must be a mental thing.
Yeah.
Of your brain's like, well, now no fooling. Now there's no lying to yourself and saying you're going back to sleep. We have to mentally engage and face the day.
This is one of the reasons having a dog is good, though. Because I know that when Patrick was in the hospital and I wasn't coming into work, but I had to get up actually even earlier in the morning than normal because I had to get dressed, take care of everything, take the dog out, make the coffee, do all the stuff myself, get to the hospital, get my laptop set up, get the news done to send off to whoever was covering the news for me. I had to like do more and get up earlier than I did when I was coming to work. And I would have those mornings because I was so depressed and stressed out and worried about things and not sleeping well. But, you know, you wake up in the morning and you don't want to get up. The alarm goes off. You're laying there in bed. You close your eyes. You try to go back to sleep. You open your eyes and there's this dog standing next to the bed staring at you going, I really have to pee. I really, really, really need to pee. And I can't open the front door.
I pooped in your shoes. Can you take me out, please?
So, you know, I'm completely dependent on you for this. And seriously, come on.
We should take a break here in a second because we got Anna Griffin who's going to be here, and we'll actually take a break so we can reset. There's a couple bits of business we should do right here. First of all, and I should have done this right at the outset of the program, but as you might have noticed, things are a little compressed today. Let me ask you this also, and I ask only for purposes of scheduling. When I said everything was wonky over here, I wasn't referring to this server.
Oh.
Are you sure that Greg and Sarah were not in this morning? Because there's a certain way that the audio cables are set up for Greg's computer, and they were like that this morning. So I wonder if they came in last night or if they were here this morning. I'm only wondering what sort of schedule we're on today.
I didn't see them this morning. That's all I know. And I got here about 11:30 or so. So they might have been here and left earlier, left before I got
here.
Good
thing you were here early. Good thing you were here bright. Good thing you were here bright and shiny at 11:30. All right, I will double check on that. But I want to make sure that we sort of have time to get everything done today. A couple of things. We should thank EH Vending, and you can contact them at ehvending.com, by the way. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio Extravaganza. They are also the sponsors of the Name That Snack contest. By the way, and so you are
the sponsors of my breakfast. Well, because
Did you eat the oatmeal?
No, I didn't eat the oatmeal. There was a cherry Danish in there.
Okay, we haven't even talked about the giant box of stuff yet, so we got to get to that.
I rooted around in the giant box of snacks this morning when I was waiting for you.
Rooted around. Okay. And then someone blew the horn and you had to run back to the castle. There's a huge box of stuff from EH Vending. We'll talk about that here in a second. But we should say that EH Vending, who can be contacted via their website at ehvending.com, they provide vending services for your business or company. And as Eric Snyder noted yesterday, perhaps just for your home. Like if you just want to have a vending machine put in your bathroom or something, they could probably do it. Or just here in the studio. If you want to get spare change off your drunkard friends, that could be the way you do it. So they are the sponsors, the underwriters, the generous grant providers for the Name That's Not contest. Yesterday, we gave out the second clue, and this is not today's clue. This was the clue we gave out yesterday, which would have been Wednesday. The first clue had been made by Nabisco. Second clue was sweet, not salty. Mm-hmm. And then we had two correct guesses within a minute of each other.
Just from that?
Within 60, because Cheryl immediately...
You know how many different sweet items Nabisco
and
makes?
That's the thing, and according to Cheryl, because she sees, and here's the thing, you people, is that she sees all of the guesses come in, and so she can tell who they're from. And it wasn't just like everybody was like randomly thinking of, it wasn't like somebody was sitting there guessing every single snack they could. It was two people who immediately went right to the answer, which I will reveal in a moment. Within 60 seconds, two people guessed correctly. And so the winner of the first round of Name That Snack is Harper Morgan Werner. Harper, which I'm a woman, you think? Harper Lee, a woman?
Could be male. Could be either.
Harper Morgan Werner. Well, sir, madam. Harper Morgan Werner was the first who beat the second person in by, again, about 45 seconds.
Oh, wow.
By correctly guessing Fig Newtons.
Fig Newton.
And so we'll talk more about this on the other side, but I will say congratulations to Harper Morgan Werner. And we'll also say round two begins today. So next hour or sometime later this hour, maybe about half an hour, 40 minutes from now, we will give the first clue for round number two of Name That Snack, sponsored by EH Vending. Find them again at ehvending.com. So congratulations. You'll be the recipient of a bunch of stuff. Are you just angrily shutting your laptop?
Yes, because I just keep hitting the try again button to see if it'll actually, you know, do something. And it keeps going, no, no Wi-Fi, no, no. And it's just making me angry. So I'm just shutting it and putting it aside.
Monkey meat cocaine lever.
Exactly.
Okay. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. On the other side of this, we have Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. She will be in the studio. So it'll be a whole new addition to the mockery of me, Rick Emerson. Yeah. Let's see what else we have. Corpse Watch coming out today. Also, we got your top five. It is the top five improbably from Tuesday. So really, nothing has changed. It's the same top five we didn't get to the last day you were here.
Yeah, I was sitting in the waiting room listening to this. By the way. On the intranets, and just going, I could not believe that you didn't get to the
It was that day where, as seems to be the recurring theme in today's program, where just time seemed to slip by and I wasn't really aware of it. Because yesterday I was like, all right, let's get ready to do the top five. And Eric, he winced visibly, like he visibly cringed. And I said, what's the problem? And he said, well, here's the thing. And I looked up and it was like 3:30 already. And the entire day had just gone by in the blink of an eye. So we'll get to that today. That is the top five once inescapable songs about which you may have forgotten. And there's probably other things as well. But, you know, that's for later. Now we're going to do this. We'll come back here in just a few minutes. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. This is the Emerson News Network. We return momentarily. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room robot sale. The coolerator was crammed with TV dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They had a hi-fi phone, oh boy, did they let it blast. 700 little records, all rock, rhythm, and jazz. But when the sun went down, the rapid tempo of the music fell. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. They bought a souped-up chitney, was a cherry red 53. Drove it down to Orleans to celebrate the anniversary. It was there where Pierre was wedded to the lovely mademoiselle. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell. Truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks, it goes to show you never can tell.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
carry a switchblade knife. Sick boy likes to get into fights. Sick boy, he'll go drinking with the boys all night long. Oh, hey, oh. Sick boy, la, 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 la. Sick boy, oh, hey, oh. Sick boy, la, 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 la. Sick boy, oh, hey,
listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. So Joshua from EH Vending just messaged me and he said, "So we had this whole discussion last night, Cheryl and I, about the contest because we had the two correct guesses for Name That Snack, and so we were just trying to figure out. And as you noted, I guess I'm giving too much away here, but one of the real tricks with the contest is trying to make it Google-proof.
Yeah.
Because I guess we can say now, that we've already had a career, now that the first round is already done, like inexplicably, that you had suggested as either the first or the second clue something like created in Delaware or wherever they
invented in Massachusetts. Because when I had Googled cookie invented in Massachusetts, it came up with page after page of stuff about Toll House cookies.
Right.
And so I thought, aha, this will be awesome. But then right as we were about to start the contest, I thought, oh, what if I just put in, snack invented in Massachusetts. And the very first thing that came up was Fig Newton. And I went, okay, don't use that one.
So now the key is trying to come up with clues that you can't just, put into Google and have it just,
right.
And have it, to just, suggest or auto, auto prompt you for the, which is why they don't do the, the Lifeline thing, on any of like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire type shows anymore, apparently, which I had never thought about. And there's been some discussion. I haven't seen any of the Cash Cab episodes since it came back from that long hiatus. But apparently there was some discussion about on Cash Cab, they were afraid that people were going to start somehow utilizing Like, is there that thing on Cash Cab where you stop and you like you ask some guy in the corner?
Yeah.
Like you ask the guy at the hot dog stand.
But they also do a call somebody.
Are they allowed to call from Cash Cab?
They were. They in the first few seasons at least they did.
I think they may have gotten rid of that for the same reason, or maybe they were talking about getting rid of it at the same because all of these other shows had. So we will have we'll have round two of Name That Snack coming up here in about 25 minutes or so.
I'm just shocked. I am shocked that because Nabisco makes so many products, and that the clues were. Anna Griffin, the first clue, well, you know what it is now, but the first clue was made by Nabisco, and the second one was sweet, not salty. And boom, two people guessed Fig Newton. Like, wow.
Damn you, Don Taylor. I was just seconds away from loading Anna Griffin's intro music. Wait. There we go. Joining us now, writing a twice-weekly column for The Oregonian, covering life in Portland and Multnomah County, Anna Griffin. Hello, how are you today?
Fig Newtons are not cookies.
They're cookie-like substances.
Oh, they're disgusting.
They are disgusting.
They're kind of cake-ish, though.
They're only disgusting to me because here's the thing about it is I'm not trying to knock them because obviously they're very popular, but the thing about Fig Newtons is that they are a little bit of each and not enough of either. They're not crisp, yet they're not like a cake. They're sort of squishy. And also, Fig Newtons seem uncomfortably similar to something that your mom would give you, claiming it to dessert, and it's not really.
And that's how we use them in my house, and that's why imagine you're a kid and you open up your lunchbox. And there's a Fig Newton.
Right.
I mean, really.
And you can't trade that with anybody.
And you think my mom does not love me.
Right. And, you know, and that's true, by the way. That's evidence that you are unloved by your family. Just
Jimmy
like...
got an Oreo. I got a Fig Newton.
And I was thinking about this last night when Patrick was having his thing at the hospital. At Legacy, they have like a little station near the waiting area where people are getting procedures and getting operations. And there's a coffee machine and then just a whole array of teas and hot cocoa mix and things like that. And there's a little basket full of crackers and graham crackers and little individual packets of cookies. And I was looking at this, and it is that obviously they buy things from the Nabisco folks. There were Fig Newtons. And there's another cookie I'm not going to name, but because we might use it later. But yeah, there were Oreos. And it was like, I was looking at these going, I wonder what the percentage is of Oreos that they go through. As opposed to, like, say, the Fig Newtons or the little packets of graham crackers.
It's the same package of Fig Newtons they got 5 years ago.
Yeah, it just sits there.
Because, you know, people are going to go, oh, get coffee. Oh, they have cookies. They have this. Ooh, Oreos. The first thing you can do is grab the Oreos.
Although it's at the hospital, so maybe if you know you're going to have to run into a doctor, you might take the Fig Newton just so the doctor doesn't frown at you.
Plus, there's also little individual packets of saltines, and I'm going, who eats those? Who's wanting those? Except for maybe pregnant ladies.
Let me just tell you this. Let me just tell you the saddest thing that I have ever seen is, in my life about individual packets of saltines. I used to work when I was, 15. I think it was an actual legal job where I signed paperwork, so I must have been at least 15. But I used to work at a truck stop that was right off the side of a highway that ran. It was a 395 that goes right through my hometown. And I was working at the truck stop, and I would work this horrible, this weird, like 11 p.m. Something in retrospect was clearly, I think this must have been a violation of some like state work policy. But I would work like 11 p.m. to like 4 a.m. or something at this truck stop. And the guy who worked in the kitchen with me was always, he was one of those guys who was just perpetually out of money. I suspect because he had at least one drug habit, probably two, and I think a couple ex-wives. And so I never saw that guy have any kind of a meal that did not just consist of like 70 packets of saltines. He'd just go, well, it's time for lunch, he would say without irony, and he would sit down at the break room table and just dump out a box of saltines and just sit there and just shove them into his mouth one after the other. And he didn't seem to – the weirdest thing is he himself did not seem upset by this. It was just sort of like a, well, this is my lot in life kind of a thing.
Well, because it was the box of saltines, not individual packets. That would be the sadder thing.
Well, but it was a box of packets because it was a restaurant. And so it was all like the individual – like you would go put out on the table or something with the napkins. And when he would just put them into his mouth like a reverse vending machine. And then when he's done, he'd go, well, all right, back to work. And then he would just get back behind the deep fryer. It was the weirdest thing.
We always had this giant box of saltines at my house when I was growing up. And my parents, at some point when I was a child, they had bought a thing of the saltines that came in like a tin box. That was a giant tin saltine box. But then they would buy, of course, the new crackers, and they would come in a cardboard box. So my mother would take them out of the cardboard box and put them into the tin, because that was where they went, into the saltine tin.
Fancy.
And one of the things she would do sometimes as a special treat, she would make like sort of a frosting out of margarine and powdered sugar and like spread it in between saltines and make a little sandwich. And she would tell me, we used to have these for dessert when I was a kid because we were really poor. And all I could think was, well, you're not poor now. You can eat real food. What's wrong with you?
That's one of the worst things I've ever heard. I have no follow-up for that. That's like my mother would talk about like having bacon fat sandwiches when she was a kid. And you'd just be like, why are you telling me this? Like, why would you put that in my head? And again, not poor. You know, it's like you weren't living in a clapboard shack, presumably, right?
Yeah, my parents, every once in a while, my dad would like buy that horrible like dried chipped beef stuff.
Yeah.
And like make chipped beef gravy, and then eat it over toast. And he's like, well, we had to eat this in the army. I'm like, yes, you had to eat it in the army. You had to, because they had to feed a whole lot of people with crap food.
It's like
you don't have to eat crap anymore.
My grandmother would occasionally want a steaming cup of Bosco or something. And he would just be like, no, you can't. It's no. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Thursday. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian is here. We'll get to the news desk here in a few. We've got a big pile of watches to get to. We got your top five. We'll do the second round of Name That Snack. So Name That Snack, just so you are aware, Anna, is so where – and this is what makes it even more inexplicable that the first round ended after only two clues. We select a snack food, a snack item, and then we start – we give one clue each weekday, starting with the very broad, going to the very narrow. And so Fig Newtons were guessed after the following two clues. It's made by Nabisco. And it's sweet, not salty. And we had two people guess it.
Well, because you have a lot of listeners whose mothers didn't love them as children.
Well, that probably does explain it. So today we're going to start the second round of that. And so
and now we have Cheryl coming up with clues, because apparently you and I are lame. and our clues are not hard enough.
Too easy.
And I got to tell you, and the first clue that she's come up with is genius. So we'll do that later on this hour.
It's made from human flesh.
And the prize... The prize that people are getting for this, so this would have been Harper, was the person who guessed the Fig Newton thing, is we were told there was a little bit of a misunderstanding here, because we were told, well, E.H. Vending, who is the sponsor of this, that they are going to be providing just a whole bunch of snack food like that they stock in their machines, and that'll go to the person who guesses it. And so the same day that we start the contest, this huge like crate of stuff arrives. And I'm like, well, that's fantastic. I guess we'll just sort of we'll parcel it out ourselves, and we'll figure it out, you know, like depending on how many clues it took and how long the round went before somebody guessed it, we'll figure out whether they get a few things or whether they get the whole box or whatever. So I'm opening it last night. I'm sitting here in the studio, and I'm on the phone with Cheryl, and I have the whole box of stuff open. And I said, okay, well, there's just a bunch of stuff in here. I mean, there's like 85 different things. I said, how do you want me to do this? Should I take a picture of all of this and send it to you so you can sort of apportion it, or do you want me to list it? And she said, oh, no, that's all just for you and Dawn. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, no, the EH Vending, and I guess I should have figured this out, that they are actually like assembling like sort of like gift basket type things and sending them. They're handling all the fulfillment, as they say, for all that. This is just stuff they sent us because they have learned that I am incapable of going more than 5 or 6 minutes without just shoving something into my mouth.
I want to know if they want to sponsor a newspaper column, because you guys could survive an apocalypse with that box.
I got to tell you, it's the amount.
And most of that is going to be for Rick, by the way, because I'm not a big chip eater. I don't eat a lot. And there are about like 150 bags of chips in there.
And it's the kind of stuff that I've learned that I just, you know, I can eat well, but the way that I eat well is just by not having stuff at the house, because if it's there, I'll eat it. So now that option has been taken away from me, because it's just – and there's some things in there that I've never seen before, by the way. There's a little bit of what they call line extension happening. There's a Twix-style snack in there. It's the two small bars, but it's from Three Musketeers.
I already ate that.
Is it – really?
Yeah. It was delicious.
Okay, that's just that is socially unacceptable. I think it's a known thing that you don't do that.
I was all alone here. I thought you were dead.
You know, that's the only time I'm going to let you pull the card for doing something and blame it on the fact that I overslept this
After
morning.
After I ate it, I will tell you this: I ate it, and it was so amazingly delicious and weird and interesting that I was immediately felt guilty that I had eaten it, and you weren't. Walmart here. So I just thought, I'm going to have to go find this and buy one and bring it back to replace so Rick can try it, because it was sweet. Delicious.
I'll tell you what, you know what?
But so
you
can, I am going to do that.
Or I was just going to say, you can or you're not, because we just, I'll let you. With, you know, today you get all the free shots you like at me, because so I had a there was a bit of an incident today where I think we figured out that I'm on a one missed show every 8 year average, so I overslept this morning and got here decidedly late, and so we do two shows back to back. We do this show and we do another hour long show called Legion of News.
And that was late, as in Cheryl and I both called his wife to find out if he was in the hospital or dead.
They went right to dead. So there was sort of an ad hoc encore presentation of Legion of News today. By the way,
apparently his elderly neighbor had to hobble across the street in the cold to pound on the door to make sure he was alive.
I should clarify that point right now, because there's two elderly neighbors that we have discussed a lot on the show over the years, and so we're sort of conflating them right now. There's a woman named Tippy who lives down the street, who's like 1,000 years old, and is just, she's one of those old people. Go one of two ways: they become really adorable, or they become not really adorable. Tippy is a woman who lives around the corner down the street. She's, you know, she's just ancient. I have no idea how old she is, but it's one of those things where you go into her house, because Laura and I will go visit her every now and again, and she's got like the photographs of her with her husband, you know, in his like sailor outfit, like his like on when he was on leave from the Navy or something, and it is. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but it's like so long ago that she is not recognizable at all. Like, you would never, ever guess that it's her. And the photograph is like – it's almost sepia tone. I mean, it's like one of those Pioneer photos where you had to sit there for an hour and a half while the, you know, while the chroma key thing developed or whatever. So she's great. There's a second woman in our neighborhood who is – I think every neighborhood has their own Gladys Kravitz. And that's who I was. That's who I was welcoming this morning, and it was the
so
thing,
she was probably eager to go over
the
and,
best
and see what
day
was going on
of her life. I mean, I don't
is
care.
Is he dead? What's wrong?
Maybe he's on drugs.
I always thought he was on drugs.
Unless he's the house burns down, or I am taken out of the home by cops later on this year with like a blazer over my head. This is, we have made her year by giving her like some drama where she had to come over and, you know, and knock on the door to make sure that I was awake and up and around. And it's that thing of like, and I think there is a universally known sort of like, you could, as you said when I came in this morning and I still looked a little frazzled and bleary, like there's a known sort of look or an expression on somebody's face like that is the, I am running really late and like, thank you, I appreciate, but I gotta get out of here, so just you know thanks, and like I gotta go, talk to you later. Everybody kind of knows that, you know, when that's the case, you can tell. There's a tone of voice that people have that is the, I'd love to stay and talk, but I gotta go, bye. And it was clear when I answered, you know, the door this morning, I think that was the case, especially because she'd been told, like, hey, you know, there's the thing where he's late for the show and whatever. And it's like, but even that, literally, as I shut the door on her this morning, she was still talking at me. Because I tolerated, and it's that,
you
thing
know,
of,
your wife called, and I was worried. And
it's the thing of, like, how long do you listen? Because on the one hand, she has done, I guess, she has, as Jack Rebney would say, done me a kindness by coming and knocking on the door and making sure that I hadn't been killed by a radon leak. On the other hand, now she sees that I am up and awake, and it was an oversleeping thing, and I got to go. And yeah, literally, the door just shuts. And
so anyway, I'll just be, you know, because I was wondering, because I was just sitting on the front porch, and I was waiting for the mailman to come by, and, you know, his wife left him, and so he you know, he's really unhappy these days, and so I try to talk to him, make sure that everything is going okay with him, especially because he has to deliver to that house next door to me, and, you know, that house next door to me is, I don't think they have jobs, I don't know how they pay their rent, and they keep me up all hours of the night, and the walls in my apartment are so thin,
and meanwhile, I'm in, like, in the bedroom just putting on my shoes, not even hearing, so it was just a bit of a morning around the Emerson household.
I'll bet Max was just snickering to himself, too.
Oh, man, and of course, the doorbell, rang, and there is nothing that will send Philo into just an absolute panic like the doorbell ringing. He just thinks it's like the apocalypse comes. So it was just, it was like a, and the final thing I'll say, and then we have to go to the news desk and get some of this done, and we'll talk about what is coming up in the Oregonian. We'll do Name That Snack, all that stuff coming up. The final thing I'll say is that it is also the thing of when you have overslept, you were late for something, and you are required to go from 0 to 60, like, instantly. You know what I mean? Like, there is no gradual ramping up. And so not only do you immediately have to be awake and functional, and you are forced to skip all of your morning routines, and all of your morning rituals must be, you know, they are obviated. You're also not allowed to bitch about it. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing about oversleeping, is that your whole day is effed, like, out of the gate, and it's like you can't complain about it because it's your own fault. Like, you're a hoist by your own petard. And so not only must you not complain about it, you then have to spend the rest of the day doing the inverse of complaining, which is apologizing to everybody else for, like, you know, effing up their morning, you know? It's just, it's like, it's like all of the worst things in life put into one, you know, tightly condensed package. On that note, at the news desk, it is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A labradoodle named Oscar became a four-legged fire alarm and probably saved a house from burning down on Wednesday. Firefighters say the dog's owner found Oscar looking out a window and barking relentlessly just before 1 p.m. in Happy Valley. Turns out the dog was actually pointing to a van on fire. The dog's owner called 911, and firefighters were able to put out the blaze before it spread to the neighbor's home. A spokesman for the Clackamas Fire District says the van might be a total loss. The fire also charred the exterior of the garage doors. The cause of the fire isn't yet known, and one person was treated for minor respiratory issues.
Are labradoodles, is that a thing that existed before, like, 10 years ago? Because I never heard of them before then.
I think they've been around for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things
I think
that
there may be some point where they finally decided to recognize it as an actual breed. I mean, maybe not an AKC breed, but an actual breed.
As a society, we our self-respect slipped to the level that we were able to say the term labradoodle without losing it.
See, but I am to me, it's like saying that I'm sending a tweet. I find myself trying to either, like, I'll sort of slur it when it comes out of my mouth, you know, or I'll try to find another way around it because it's just
like that tutti frutti fresh and
I still won't say that
because it's like, and the thing is that looks delicious, but no, I'm not. No one will say that.
No, I point at it. I also won't order the moons over my hammy by name.
See, I won't order that because I don't actually want to eat that, but every time I go to Denny's, I will see that on the menu and I will say it out loud and giggle.
Yeah, no, I Aaron Duran and I we were at a Denny's one time some years ago, and it's we both had the same sort of a thing because he was getting ready to order and he just pointed at the thing, and it's like, and sometimes the waitress will F with you and she'll try to get you to say it. And she'll, like, you know, she'll say, "What's that? You wanted the Super Bird sandwich?" No, this right here. And it's like I think they must know. Because the same is the Rudy Tutti thing at IHOP.
Yeah, that's at IHOP. In your life,
right?
If you work in a place like that,
trying to leverage the guy into saying it. That's the voice, by the way, of somebody who has been who has worked as a waitress.
No, this is just someone who I refuse to eat in any restaurant that names anything something that I refuse to say out loud.
You know who else does that is Red Robin. Red Robin has a lot of. The finest hamburger served at Red Robin, and that really is the thing about Red Robin is that's some food that I know that I am supposed to, like, snarkily dismiss, but I'm not. But that would be a lie. That would be insincere if I were to tell you that I did not enjoy their food. I do to an almost unexpressible degree. But the menu item of choice there for me is this thing called. I swear to God, it's called the Hunk of Burnin' Love Burger. And just the shame that you have to, you know, and just saying it out loud, it just, I mean, it's like, yeah, you just feel like you are just slipping several notches down the evolutionary ladder.
If you feel bad enough about yourself that you will order the Hunk of Burnin' Love Burger, you will actually say it out loud.
Yeah, and so that's like you just get all the shame done at once.
It's like it's the last step to actually eating the burger.
Yeah, and you just feel bad for yourself, too, because then there's a tone of voice you get when you do it, too. He's like, I'll have the Hunk of Burning Love Burger.
Exactly. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here is your Geek Watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
It's just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is Don Taylor with your Geek Watch for Thursday.
Superhero creator Stan Lee finally gets a star today on Hollywood's Walk of Fame. Lee was asked where he got his inspiration for characters like Spider-Man and Iron Man.
As a child, I didn't really know anybody who shot webs or crawled on buildings or wore suits of armor and flew or anything like that. I just imagined them, and there they were.
That answer was less interesting than I thought. I mean, I don't really know what I expected him to say, but it wasn't. I'm underwhelmed by that.
Lee says he never imagined his characters would enjoy decades of popularity.
And the people I worked with who co-created them with me, the many talented artists, we just hoped that the books would sell and we'd continue to get our salary and be able to pay our rent.
Lee was asked if he has a favorite character.
I
guess Spider-Man is my favorite because he's the most popular and he's known and loved worldwide. But I really love them all.
You know, Spider-Man,
because he made me the most money.
Is it Stripperella that he created with Pam Anderson?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or am I thinking of something else?
No, he sounds like somebody's grandpa there.
Stan Lee?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got to be in his 80s, I think.
He's like the comic book Hugh Hefner at this point, though.
I was just going to say that. That is so amazing that you said that because I had the same thought.
But anytime you see him do cameos in movies or on TV shows, and he looks so cool, and there he kind of sounds like he could live in your neighborhood, and he would come and knock on your door, and you would be closing the door in his face, but he'd still be talking.
And so then, anyway, after the Battle of Anzio, we ducked over to Paris. And let me tell you, you have never met ladies who like to swing like the Parisian ladies. There's one guy I got a dose of the clap. His name was Charlie. And you're just going, that's great. I have to go to work now.
You weren't the person I know who went to the and got something signed by Barbera. Was it Joe Barbera?
No.
Because it was, I can't remember who it was, but it was a friend of mine who went to this. There was a signing in mall. I mean, I think he's probably dead now, but Joe Barbera of Hanna-Barbera.
Right.
And he was at a mall and he was signing stuff and talking to people. And there's this big old long line of people. And he was like 100 years old. And people would come up and he'd go, "Who's your favorite character?" And somebody said, "Yogi Bear." "I hate Yogi Bear." And he handed him something back. And it's like he was just being really irascible. "Who's your favorite character?" "The Huckleberry Hound." I didn't even like that one. That was idiotic. And he has him back. And then the guy I knew got up there and he said, "Who's your favorite character?" And he said, "Space Ghost." And Joe Barrett stopped and looked at him and went, "Good for you. I love Space Ghost."
That's fantastic. Especially when you consider that all the Hanna-Barbera characters, with the exception of Space Ghost, are fundamentally the same. I mean, they're all Fred Flintstone. They're all either Fred or Barney. When you think about it, really, that is all. I mean, if you think about Yogi Bear and Boo Boo, it's just Fred and Barney. It's Fred and Barney with fur. That's it.
Well, no, except now it's Dan Aykroyd and Justin Timberlake.
Is that who does the voices for the...
Uh-huh.
Did that movie already come and go?
Yes. Well, I think it's still in theaters,
out.
Actually.
Really?
I have a couple more weeks where I get to avoid taking my child to see it, yes.
I didn't think anybody would actually want to see it. I thought kids would be creeped. I thought kids wouldn't care, and adults would be either angered or unnerved.
By the way, our friend Eric D. Snyder wrote a hilarious review of Yogi Bear that you can find online.
Does that mean he actually watched the entire thing?
Oh, yes. He was paid to go see Yogi Bear and write about it, and so he did, and his review is delightful. Mm.
You really are right about the Stan Lee thing, though, that it's... You know, that it's like, you know, it's like his jersey is sort of hanging in the rafters. Like, there's nothing you can say to knock Stan Lee, like with Hefner, you know. And the other guy I always put in that sort of triumvirate is Gene Simmons. They sort of seem to be different variations on a theme, you know, in different walks of American life. But at the same time, you know, it is like, you know, he does start to get all the hallmarks of being the old guy. Like every time you hear Stan Lee, you know, he's gotten a little bit older and he sounds just like a much cooler version of the old guy in your neighborhood that just sits on a bench and just goes on and on to the birds about nothing.
Yeah, he's the lovable, annoying grandpa because it's like every movie they make from one of his characters, he ends up doing like a little walk on.
Right.
And every geek in the audience is just goes, "Oh, Jesus, it's right. Stan Lee's cameo." And at the same time, you smile to yourself like there's this part of you that actually kind of thinks it's adorable, even though it's annoying.
Right. Well, and plus, you know that guy, he just, you know, that he toiled for so long, you know, before he made any money. And then even when he started making money, he was still unknown to the general public. Yeah. And so he is, you know, so it's not like he's had a bad life or anything, but he's just now kind of getting his moment in the spotlight for the wider audience.
Did you ever see that horrible, horrible superhero reality show that he did?
Oh, is it? It wasn't called like So You Want to Be a Superhero, but it was basically that.
It was
right?
something like that, yeah. And it was like, you know, us, and it was so horribly, obviously scripted and really terrible. And one of the conceits was, of course, that they were all being manipulated by Stan Lee, who was trying to turn them into real superheroes. And his face would appear on this giant flat screen TV, and he'd say, "Well, heroes, I have another assignment for you." And it was just embarrassing.
It's one of those. Death will be sad, and yet in some ways a bit of a relief.
Well, we've talked about this with with Ryan White. We had this conversation about looking back at, you know, the bands you love and saying, you know, it would have been better if they all perished in a plane crash after, and then you would like name the album, you know, because then they wouldn't have been around to sort of sully their own legacy. And again, I'm not knocking Stan Lee, but you really are right about that, because I think about that with Hefner sometimes, because, you know, he's a guy who really was. Really changed American society, and you know, and as and Playboy magazine, especially like the Playboy Foundation, who have funded innumerable First Amendment lawsuits over the years, and have really been a force for societal progress in many, many ways, you know, and just led sort of a cultural, you know, jailbreak at the same. So you can't take that away. But at the same time, it's like, and the thing about Playboy is that Hefner, in his own weird way, always founded it on this image of being. On a sort of, you know, on a sort of style, on being very tasteful and classy in its own kind of sexualized way. But then over time just kind of became Bob Guccione, you know, which is a thing that nobody, you know, that nobody should do. And, you know,
Once you just start wearing pajamas all of the time and sleeping with women who are half your age and still having parties like at your mansion 24 hours a day, you do become a bit of a caricature.
Yeah. Pink flamingos start to look tacky.
I guess, was it you and I, we were talking about that new, the book that's coming out from one of his former bimbettes that is, you know, yeah, she's like one of the 12 blonde girls or whatever, and she's got a book that's coming out, and it does not paint a flattering picture of life inside the mansion.
My favorite thing about that reality show that they did, The Girls Next Door, though, the only thing that I really enjoyed about the show would be they would have these scenes where the girls would go downstairs and would have to interact with the staff at the Playboy Mansion. Like, let's go bake cookies. We're going to go make cookies. Because apparently the Playboy Mansion is this amazing, magical place where they have, like, a staff of, like, you know, 80 people there at all times, and, like, a chef and, like, 14 helpers. And 24 hours a day, you can get anything you want. Like, they always have, like, cookie dough ready for fresh-baked cookies if Hef wants fresh-baked cookies, that kind of thing. But like, we're going to make food. And they go down to the kitchen, and the cameras would follow down, and you see just the barely tolerant kitchen staff going, "Oh, good, the girls are in the kitchen cooking."
It's in my contract. I don't have to interact with anyone above a size D, okay?
Like, and there's cameras on, so I have to be nice.
I do get the sense that it is one of those things like the White House, though, where if the president just wakes up at 4 in the morning and needs maple pancakes, like, got to be a guy ready to do it. Hefner, one of the things I love about him is that he is so, like, unabashed about some of that. So when they talked about, because there were at one point two Playboy mansions. There was one in L.A. and one in Chicago. And then I guess he sold one of them. I think he sold the one in Chicago. Yeah. And I think he's not the one in L.A. exclusively. But he said that the first thing he would do whenever he got, like, a new place, and especially when he bought these two mansions, when you buy a mansion, like, how do you even move in? How do you to make it a Playboy mansion as opposed to just a huge house? And he actually said, and you could tell he wasn't kidding at all, he just said, "Well, the first thing I noticed is that there were no secret tunnels or passageways, so I had them all put in." And he was like, even then he was like 50. And you go like, well.
And that is not, that's not some kind of Playboy euphemism for anything.
You know, and I guess in a weird way, you just sort of have to, he's like, don't you get the sense that he lives in some some adult sexualized version of that place where Pee Wee Herman lives in the Pee Wee Herman movie.
Kind of, yeah.
You know, where there doesn't seem to be any supervision of any kind, and his whole breakfast is like just Mr. T cereal and that gun that shoots candy.
It's like the word of the day is always boobies.
It's a cross between Pee Wee's Playhouse and the Haunted Mansion.
There's your Geek Watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
By Grandthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We're here with Anna Griffin, columnist from the Oregonian. What is happening in this big, kooky, crazy city of ours?
Oh, Rick Emerson, do I have a story for you? So my column for Saturday is about the coyote that appeared this fall up in Alameda, on the Alameda Ridge in Irvington, some of the fairly plush neighborhoods of Northeast Portland. And it turns out it's not rabid coyotes. It's not coyotes who've been forced out of their habitat by urban development.
Is it chupacabras?
No, it's jackasses who have been going around leaving out food for them. Because they think it's cool to see coyotes in the neighborhood.
Because they think it's adorable.
They
and
do.
So then they want to. This is
Portland.
Not unlike the people at Yellowstone that always thought it was cute to feed the bears.
But it gets better. So I interviewed the conservation guy from the Audubon Society, and he was telling me that it happens all the time, that he gets stories of people who just don't understand that wildlife, the whole notion of wildlife, and he said several cases in his 20 years here of women breastfeeding baby raccoons that they have found.
Oh! Oh!
Do not want it.
No!
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's just certifiable.
Here's the thing. Of all of the statements you could have made just now, if I had had to list in advance, what is it that Anna Griffin will say next? Rick Emerson. And I would have said, Jack, I think the answer is, I would have gone through 10,000 other things before I got to that.
It was one of those interviews where he kept talking and being very reasonable and wise. And I just finally, 5 minutes later, had to say, we have to go back because I have not heard anything you have said since nursing raccoons.
My mouth is actually open.
Mine too. And I have that image in my head, and I don't want it there.
Okay, but now I am the you to your him, because now I have to go back and just expand that thread a little bit. Okay, let's just all stop and get a hold of ourselves for a second. All right. What is the A to Z? How does that happen where a woman says, okay, here's a baby raccoon, it needs somebody to take care of it, and then like 10 seconds later,
I have milk.
She's like, she's got a boob out and she's feeding a raccoon. It just sounds absurd even to say it out loud. How does that happen?
I Portland. I don't know. I've never heard anything more Portland.
Do
than
they
that.
Not have teeth when they're babies? Is that the thing? Wouldn't you?
Don't know.
This is Bob Salinger, who's the conservation director for the Audubon Society. And he told me that should he ever write a book, he's going to have a chapter entitled Boobs and Beasts.
Yeah.
Because just the sheer number of animals that he has seen come out of people's cleavages as you just nestle the baby and you tuck that in your shirt and you...
I guess, and I don't even know where to go with this. All right, I just have to. The image just continues to haunt me. It's like I try to think of other things, and it's just burned into my brain. This is the guy that has to deal with anything like this that happens, where there's some sort of wild animal. And as you said, people always sort of, when they hear wildlife, they disregard the first syllable of that phrase, and they think that the animal wants to be your friend, and that it's eventually going to like put on pants and ride a tandem bicycle with you to work.
Apparently, in Northeast Portland, what we've had in the last few months, very well-meaning people who leave out puppy chow for the coyotes, someone who is leaving out chicken.
Because eventually that just turns to leaving out puppies and chickens.
Well, cats. Cats. Yeah. And there, I mean, I know there are people out there who will leave out food for raccoons and pet raccoons. And
yeah, that's the thing where, I don't think you need to do that. I don't think raccoons have any difficulty finding food on their own.
It is to the point where Multnomah County later this year will consider a new item in the code, making it illegal to essentially feed deer, raccoons, coyotes, bears,
possums,
waterfowl in parks, and I chalk it up to people just being stupid.
Right.
And he is much kinder than I am, and points out that we good progressive Portlanders want to feel like we are part of the landscape and want to be friendly to animals, but what we don't actually realize is we're doing more harm than good.
Well, even like deer, who would, I don't think, I mean, I guess unless they get hit by your car or something, deer aren't going to pose a physical danger to people. But if deer, but then deer would bring other things, you know, but it's, you like get, the whole food chain comes to the
city.
But
they also trample people's yards. They will go into people's, you know, yards and they'll eat up their landscape. And deer,
is that true?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I lived in West Lynn, there was a horrible problem with it. But yes, there would be people who would put out food for the deers, but the deer, to get to the house where the food is, would like jump other fences.
Tear up your petunia patch.
Yeah, and people would be planting lovely flowers for the springtime, and the deer are going, mmm, and it's tender new blossoms.
And it's very dangerous for them, too. I mean, I have seen cases where deer wandered into urban settings. You know, deer wanders downtown.
Yeah.
And just gets hit by a car or kind of loses its mind and jumps through a plate glass window to try to get out of a building.
Yeah, you're always seeing those stories where, like, a moose or a deer gets trapped in somebody's swimming pool.
You know, it's the thing about raccoons, though, we get in my neighborhood, those they walk through a lot after dark, you know, and I'll hear, and that's a thing where we actually have a little fence. And one of the reasons is because I just took it as an article of faith that if I didn't, that there would be some night when I would let Max out before, you know, everybody went to bed, and that he would, and he has no sense of what's dangerous to him and what's not. Like, he assumes that he is the biggest, most important thing on the block, and that he is exactly the kind of dog that we just ended up getting, you know, just completely just annihilated by some raccoon, because at night, probably, I don't know, a couple times a month, I will go out now, like taking out the trash, or I'm just doing whatever, and it's like you'll kind of hear the rustling, and you'll look over, and what I get a lot in my neighborhood is I'm assuming it's the mom, but it's like the parent raccoon, and then like the three raccoon cubs following along. And it's, you know, and that's the thing where you hear that is especially dangerous, because if they even think for a moment that you are like endangering their kids, that like they will like unload on you. And raccoons are, I mean, they're violent animals. They're really dangerous.
Can be vicious. And you see people all the time who, a squirrel falls out of a tree, a baby squirrel's mom's hit by a car. Mm-hmm. And there's a bit, you know, they take it home, put it in a shoebox and feed it milk from a bottle. Hopefully not from things.
From nature's bottle. Yeah. Anna.
But a grown-up squirrel, not a nice creature.
No, in fact, now I can share my own crazy animal lady story. It is not nearly as good. It doesn't involve breastfeeding, to the best of my knowledge. But when I worked at CBS, and I won't give her name, but anybody who works at CBS who worked there this time knows exactly who I'm talking about, because it wasn't a secret. There is a woman who worked at CBS when I was there, and who. Apparently, her home was a little bit of a, and she wasn't like, and she was like, I think in her early to mid 20s. So it's like, everybody kind of sees the crazy cat lady when she's old, but it's like how you never see baby pigeons. You never see the crazy cat lady when she's young. She was the first time I ever did, because you always heard that her house is a little bit of a menagerie, but I didn't really understand the extent of it until we went through about this 6 or 8 month period where there were squirrels in the ceiling. They would get into the air ducts. There was apparently an opening into the building that nobody could quite find, and there was a screen or something missing somewhere. And so, like, once or twice a week, squirrels would come into the building, I think looking for food or warmth or whatever, and you'd hear them sort of running around. And there was actually this whole weird period of time where the squirrels would actually come down out of the ducts or the vents in the ceiling, and they would come down and they would run around the office. And I was there at night a lot or on the weekends. And sometimes there'd be these great moments where I would like leave my office, and you know where my office was, upstairs. I would leave my office and I would be walking down to like the water cooler or something, and I would turn into the cubicle farm, and there would be a squirrel just sitting on the wall of a cubicle. And one time there were two squirrels sitting on adjacent cubicle walls, and it's like I come around and it was like a Mexican standoff where it's like I'm looking at them and they're looking at me. And then just all of our, you know, and then the camera cuts to all of our glittery eyes while the good, the bad, and the ugly theme plays. And then I would just sort of go, uh-huh. And I would back up and I'd turn around and I would pretend that I'd, and it was like, we didn't see each other here. You know, let's just, none of us were here ever. And, so these squirrels were running around the office, and then she would leave out food and like a little thing and, you know, and whatever. And she would somehow like ensnare them or catch them in like a box or whatever. I don't even know how the hell she caught them, and she would take them home. And by the time I left CBS, she had at her home, which also had numerous cats, by the way, that she had taken home like 3 or 4 squirrels from the office that were apparently all just living somehow like in her place.
Or they had, you know, become food for the cats.
I just have no idea how that, you know, how that works. But yeah, there's people who have no line of demarcation, like between themselves and wild. It's like the grizzly bear guy, you know, the grizzly man in the, you know, which. You know, and that is that's a thing that usually works itself out. That's an oven that cleans itself eventually.
Well, nature wills out in the end.
And the thing is, people really don't understand that whole wildlife thing. There's a really interesting documentary that was just on PBS, and I ended up watching it on Netflix, I think, called Decoding Dogs. And it's just all about how dogs evolved. And they did things like they go to that place in Siberia where they've been domesticating foxes for like 50 years, and they're turning them more dog-like, breeding them. Well, deliberately trying to see how dogs evolved by doing it with foxes, breeding the tamest foxes with the other tamest foxes. And they're now, they've been doing it for 50 years, and the dog, and they look more like dogs, and they're friendly, and they wag their tails, and they make eye contact and stuff. But the thing is, they tried to do this whole nature versus nurture thing with, I think it was coyotes. And they took little five-day-old coyote pups and raised them. They had people take them home and raise them like puppies. And the thing is, there's a point at which it doesn't matter. It absolutely does not matter how you treat it, how cute it is, how you feed it, how much you pet it, how much it's socialized. It's a wild animal. And it gets to an adolescent age and they don't listen and they don't respond to human gestures or contact. They don't make eye contact like dogs do. They're wild animals. And eventually it was like, they can't live in the house anymore because they just keep jumping up on, you know, the thing and growling at me.
Well, and it's like, and you got to figure that even, you know, even human babies grow up and start disregarding their parents. So, you know, if you're bringing home like a moose, it's probably not going to work out any differently.
But also the thing was, though, that dogs have evolved to where they actually look at our eyes. They respond to our facial expressions. They understand the words we say to them. They will learn from us. But the thing is, dogs, foxes, coyotes, that sort of thing, they're lacking whatever it is that has evolved in dogs to do that.
Well, and
even if you raise them in your home, they still don't have that thing.
Well, and it's also taken dogs like 14,000 years as opposed to, like, you know, we started it, you know, like, you know, John started it and then I'm taking over from him with the foxes. That doesn't quite work.
And so, like, the raccoon may be a little bit nice to you because you feed it, but it's going to turn on you in a heartbeat. It's a wild animal.
My dad was one of those guys who grew up in some, you know, and it's like not like my dad grew up in the sticks. I mean, you know, it was a small town, but I mean, it was a, you know, it wasn't like he grew up in a log cabin somewhere where they had a raccoon that, like, my grandfather brought home as a pet. And I think it was like they realized at some point they had to get rid of the raccoon because it would just, like, my grandmother would be cooking, like, you know, a Cornish game hen, and the raccoon would, you know, the raccoon would, like, pick something up and throw it to the other side of the kitchen to distract her, you know, and it would. And then she described, like, it several times, looking up, and it's like the raccoon had grabbed, like, an entire chicken off the stove and was just, like, heading out the front door with it somehow, or were they, like, vanishing down a hallway.
Oh, you crazy thing.
Yeah. That's the thing where there's no AI-style imprinting that's going to, that's going to compensate for that.
And we don't want them around us because we're horrible. I mean, they need to be frightened of us.
Well, it's just that, like, my whole thing with nature is that I have this sort of, it's like an uneasy truce, you know? It's that sort of thing where it's like, you know, it's like the fear coupled with respect where you just say, like, look, you know, where you realize in a sense that everything on Earth, everything that, like, walks, crawls, you know, flies, everything is sort of vying for the top of the food chain. Everything wants to be the apex predator. And, you know, and in most ways we are that right now. But you also realize that it's like that everybody is sort of angling, you know, for their shot. You know, it doesn't matter. Daffodils, you know, are in their own way trying to become the biggest, most important thing on Earth. And that's what I think of when I see the raccoons, you know, where I look at them and they look at me and I think, all right, we all know the game here. So I'm going to go back inside. You root around in the dumpster, but let's not try to meet during the daytime because you do also realize that, like, did you see that show, The Life Without Us? It's a documentary on the Discovery Channel. It was based on a book of the same name, I believe, where they simulated, like, if all people sort of Kirk Cameron style vanished and were taken to heaven tomorrow, not from even like a plague or a famine, but if we just vanished tomorrow, but if, like, all of the structures were left behind, if we were just all taken off to some other planet, what would happen to society? And they artificially advanced, you know, like, what would happen to highways and roads and buildings and everything that man has built, and how long it would take nature to start reclaiming it. And it was like, you know, a week, and that's where and the and they said that, you know, within probably a month, that cities would just be overrun by wildlife because it wouldn't take nature very long to figure out, like, hey, I guess they're gone. And then they would just move in. And so it is. And so that they described human society as like being, you know, one of those guys with a machete who's hacking his way through the jungle. And they said that what we don't realize is that we are constantly we are always that guy in the jungle constantly having to hack things away to keep them from re-encroaching on us. And that if we were to stop for just a moment, that nature would just swallow us up. I mean, we would just, you know, we would not have, you know, we would be here for the blink of an eye before it kind of reclaimed us all. So, and then breastfeeding.
I think we can just agree the lesson here is do not feed the animals, particularly your own bodily fluids.
Seriously. Did you ask him to, like, hook you up with, you know, like, one of these, like, to get you an interview with one of these women so you could go ask, like, what is the deal?
To anyone.
Yes, you do. That's the thing is, yes, you do.
No. Because who knows what else they're capable of?
That's what I want to find out, though.
I mean, you might be offer me some. No, thank you.
Don't you want to ask them, like, what is going on with, like, when is the first time you did it? Did she try feeding them from a bottle?
My problem is, and this was the problem I always had as a newspaper reporter, is that it's really difficult for me sometimes to not just finally crack and go, what's wrong with you?
But see, that's the difference between being a real journalist and working here, is that I have no problem asking those questions and just saying, like why, like, what is broken inside you? You know, that it's like, you know, when you hear people who have, you know, some sort of exceptionally odd sexual preference, and you just, you know, and finally you just have to go, like, what? Like with the furry, you know, it was on a show that went to James the Furry, who was a listener of ours. And I think it was like the second question I asked him. I said, did something happen to you? You know, like, did something weird.
Did you watch your mother nurse a raccoon? What happened to you?
And I think he actually said, he's just like, everybody asked that. And he's like, the answer is no and whatever. But that was like, I just couldn't not ask, because you got to figure that people like that are just, you know, effed in some way. And I guess maybe sometimes they're not. It's just they're put together differently. God damn. All right. Well, that – I have no segue from that except to say that we should do a couple here. We'll take a break. And on the other side, we'll come back. We will start round number two of Name That Snack. It is Thursday right here in the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Anna Griffin for the Oregonian is here. This is Don Taylor.
A crematorium caught fire in Meridian, Connecticut on Wednesday morning. Officials from the Meridian Fire Department said the flames could be seen shooting through the roof of the crematorium on Old Colony Road. Mike Kroll was inside the crematorium at Walnut Hill Cemetery running two retorts, or ovens, when the fire broke out. He said, the next thing I know, the alarms went off. I went running around, and the whole back of the building was engulfed in flames. Fire officials said at first they thought the 911 calls reporting the fire were false alarms. Officials said 911 calls are made a lot because people mistake smoke from the crematorium's chimney for a fire.
Can I just tell you this? So here's a thing. On the way back from Beaverton, from the CW studios, I drive by this. It's like are mortuary and a funeral home the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So I drive by. I won't name it, but there's a prominent funeral home that you can see from the highway on the way back from the CW to here. And occasionally, I will drive by, and it's like a new pope has been selected or something inside, and there's just like these plumes of what, and it's like you think to yourself, well, like, you know, is that Ted, you know, or whatever, and then I think, well, no, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have that chimney facing it, but then you think, well, where else are they going to put it?
Well,
it's a chimney, they got to have it. So,
yeah.
But that's weird. You would think that they would have a stand of trees or something that they would have grown in front, because I can't be the only person. Everybody who drives by there as there's smoke coming out must just stop to have that you would think it would cause accidents or something, because people would stop and be distracted by it. Or maybe not, it's just me.
It's what they do.
Fine. I'm the only one who breastfeeds this, you know, the squirrel. That's fine. Just be that way. Let's do one more here.
Actor Alec Baldwin says he's still thinking about the possibility of running for public office.
Hooray.
He says he gets a lot of encouragement, but it would be difficult to do without moving.
I've had people approach me about running for jobs and moving to other locations, and it's been a very difficult decision for me because I am a New Yorker and I do like living here and I would prefer to live here.
See, here's the thing is I instinctively want to respond by saying that's just a lie because no one really asks Alec Baldwin to run for office. But then you think that it's a big world. There's, you know, 7 billion people or whatever. So there probably is – There probably is some faction of humanity that thinks that that is the solution to all of our ills and problems. If we could just get Alec Baldwin into office, everything is going to run a lot better.
Yeah, I like Alec Baldwin. I really do, but I'm really not sure. I don't. What are his qualifications again exactly?
That voice.
Really? Well, see, that's the thing. It's just the golden throat with which he would deliver all the proclamations.
Even if you're just leaving obnoxious messages for your daughter, it just sounds so nice.
Well, I remember when Jesse Ventura was running for office, and I remember thinking that we had officially started to cross some sort of meridian, that we were passing some event horizon. And I mean, I recognize that pro wrestling is in some ways just a job like anything else. But when they were showing that, you know, he was like on the campaign trail. And at some point, and he was like autographing something, and it was like he was autographing one of those glossies he used to sell when he was in the WWF of him in like a pink feather boa, you know, like giving some guy the clothesline. And I thought, like, this is it. Like, this is, we've gone from Ronald Reagan to Arnold Schwarzenegger to Jesse Ventura, and we are entering the next great phase of American politics, where it's not going to matter what anybody's qualifications are. We're going to start electing people simply for pure entertainment value, which is a thing that I'm in favor of, by the way. I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Well, isn't Alec Baldwin one of those figures who we all kind of recognize that he's just a little bit nuts?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not, I mean, but and yet very likable, seems very likable.
Well, I think He is one of those guys where you like him in, even though you realize that you shouldn't, because
he's a jerk.
Yeah, because most of his personality traits, most of his attributes are unpleasant, that they're negative.
But he's just one of those people that you're just, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm just so happy his career has done what it's done, that he has this second act to his career, that he.
So he's not running loose in the city.
Yes, I guess that's it.
So he's not like, so he's, you know, he's, so he's, it's same thing with Charlie Sheen. So there's somebody so they can keep him occupied.
But he is talented. I mean, he's undoubtedly very talented, both as a serious actor and as a comic actor. He has that wonderful voice.
Yeah. I mean, there was a thing apparently because CNN being desperate to fill in space, what with Larry King gone now at all, they had a roundtable discussion on politics with Ted Nugent and Roseanne Barr and some conservative guy. I can't remember who it is. And they played a clip of this, of Alec Baldwin being interviewed by Elliot Spitzer, who apparently CNN has hired to do interviews.
You know, this is a world in which women breastfeeding raccoons does not seem all that weird.
And I guess when they did that, Ted Nugent started laughing uproariously, and then all he could do was say, CNN hired Elliot Spitzer, and he's interviewing Alec Baldwin. Is it, what is this, the Planet of the Apes? And he couldn't stop laughing.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you today and every day by a series of fine business partners, including Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Or you can call them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Was it you that told me that that Donna was expressing concern for my well-being this morning?
She was, because, you know, she was like, hi, because she came in and you weren't here, and I was sitting over in that chair, and I was like, Rick just isn't here, and he's not answering his phone, and I don't know what's going on. And she's like, oh, no. So she loaned me her cell phone. Then she came back up later. She's like, have you heard anything? And I was like, she was very concerned.
Here's the thing about Donna I was going to make, I think I've referred to her as being sort of like our own kind of Edie McClurg in some ways, that she has that whole, you know, Ed, with your back, you shouldn't be throwing anybody kind of a thing. But don't you think, like, not chronologically, she's our own younger Betty White.
I can see that, yeah, because she seems so sweet, and then she'll say something that is so sort of profane and inappropriate, and you're like, oh, Donna. And then she giggles, and then she leaves.
And then she sort of titters and scurries away down down the stairs.
Yeah.
Well, in any event, Squires Electric, they can come to your home or business and make sure that things are, because here's the thing.
If you call them, you get to talk to Donna.
That is really one of the bonuses of doing business with Squires Electric, actually, is you get to interact with Donna, who really is a fantastic person. But so if you got a business, if you got your home, you're going to be remodeling, you're going to be expanding. We actually have a listener of ours who just started a new business. Belmont. He started a gym, and so it was like you go into a building and you have to kind of gut everything out and hollow it and start from scratch and put in a different kind of wiring, and then you have to get it inspected, and that's a thing that had actually never occurred to me, that when you start a business, if you've had to do any substantial remodeling to the building or if you've had to augment it in any way, that that's the thing where the man has to come in.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, walk through and sign off on everything. Because, you know, when we came here, like, this place is already – this place, this building, wired by Squires Electric, so already taken care of.
Yeah, because even if you are capable of going in and, like, stringing wires together and making sure the lights are on, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be up to code.
So they get to walk through and there's a guy with a clipboard and a thing and he, you know, and I don't know, they got to, like, hook things up to other things. And
so who did this? And you go, I did. And they go, oh.
Yeah. And the chat, we're going to need more guys. And then they just said they go over everything with a fine tooth comb and it's just going to cause you all kinds of, and then it's the thing of like, and if something is wired incorrectly, then you're screwed because then it's like, then everything, then they're going to make you they probably get somebody of their choosing. And then they're, you know, the inspection's going to take three times as long the next time you do it. So that's at your home, too, if you're going to be remodeling. You want to make sure that it's done correctly the first time. You contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or go to squireselectric.com. They can give you a free estimate right up front so you know about how much it's going to cost. And they will follow up afterwards to make sure that everything is working flawlessly. Squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, then. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Thursday. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig with Humor Me Comedy 101, his first installment for the new year. And I have been racking my brain, and I cannot remember who the subject is for tomorrow's Comedy 101. Were you ever able to remember? Because I think he told us last week.
Yeah, he told us. I don't remember.
It's completely fallen out of my head. But that'll be tomorrow. Jim Willig in the studio for a Humor Me Comedy 101. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian is here. And in just moments, we will have Clue the First for round number two of Name That Snack.
So did you want me to tell my ferret anecdote?
Yes.
Then? Okay, because we were talking about wild animals and that sort of thing. And there was a time, as I think most of us have known girls like this when we are younger, I knew this girl who had a ferret. And she would take the ferret with her, like, everywhere and let it just sort of be in her shirt and, like, live inside her shirt. And it would poke its head up every once in a while, that sort of thing. And I just thought that was vaguely creepy, but I didn't really think much about it until a mutual friend of ours said to me once, goes, "Where does it go to the bathroom?" And I thought, oh, God.
Now, see, you started to mention this during the break. You're like, what? You're just like, I knew this girl with a ferret, and I stopped you, and I said, I have something to say about that. So, like, you know, just hold that thought for a second, because I got to get this, you know, just getting the snack clue ready and everything. Because I wanted to ask you, not that, like, you could, I mean, not that you can speak for, you know, for all X chromosomes everywhere, but what is the thing with girls and ferrets? Because it is girls. It's almost always women who have ferrets as pets, and they have, like, and the other thing is, there's some weird, unusual closeness between women who have ferrets as pets, you know, and the ferrets themselves, as opposed to, like, with a hamster or something. But there is some weird girl and ferret as pet phenomenon. There's some dynamic that happens there.
I don't know, because I knew that girl vaguely, and then I've known two guys that had ferrets. And the only thing I noticed is that all of them were hippies.
Are they unusually friendly animals? Or
they're very smart. They're very smart. They're very friendly. They do make excellent pets, but it's just one of those things that always struck me is that it seemed to be less like a girl pet, more of a hippie pet, because there just seems sort of something like, look how crazy and counterculture I am. I juggle and I have a ferret.
It's like a weird twist on a cat. It's like I'm too cool and out there to have a cat, but I have a oversized rodent.
And plus, if the thing is just going to live in your shirt, you can just sort of tote it around with you with your hacky sack materials.
Right.
You know, it's a good pickup. I mean, it's like some guys have puppies. You know, you walk around. You want to see what's living in my shirt.
There's no proper response to that from my side of the table, so I'm just going to...
Shall I pull out my weasel?
Here's Don Taylor, kids, at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A glitch that silenced the alarm clock function on a local woman's iPhone on New Year's Day is still ringing up controversy. A Massachusetts woman who lost her job at a Somerville pub called the Foundry on Elm because she overslept when her alarm failed to go off vented her frustration on a blog that has gotten national attention. Lindsay Garvey, 28, targeted her most direct criticism at Apple CEO Steve Jobs, saying he let iPhone users down. I just sort of wanted to let him know that these things can affect people, and that's all. Like, I don't want anything from it. Maybe an apology. Or maybe next time there's a glitch, shoot me an email? Garvey said she worked late on New Year's Eve and then tried to get some shut-eye before reporting in again the next morning, but she overslept. She said she takes full responsibility for being late for work, but she said she's used her cell phone and his alarm clock and watch since 2002 without a problem.
Well, which, and I, you know, and I switched over to using a phone as my alarm clock when I got a BlackBerry years ago. And incidentally, so I had the non-iPhone related oversleeping incident this morning. And so I got, and it's like I had just barely, I didn't even open the email, I think, and it's like they were already coming off the screen, people who were sending me snarky comments about, well, maybe if somebody wasn't using his iPhone as an alarm clock, and it's, you know, it's like Android users have some sort of a macro or like an app. It's the snarky comment about iPhones app that they press, and then it generates something. I will say this, though. Here's why you're noticing that. Go back and look for stories in which people are commenting about Microsoft products costing them something at work or, you know, like screwing up, you know, a project of theirs. No one ever does that. You know why? Because people just assume that Windows will screw you all the time.
And so, do you really think this is the only reason she got fired?
Probably not. This is the looking for a reason.
When I was looking for you this morning, trying to find out what's going on with you, and I called Laura, and Laura said, oh, well, he probably, like, put his phone on silent and then didn't hear the alarm go off. And I almost responded by just going, no, because if you turn the sound off on the iPhone, the alarm, you can still hear. And then I was like, she doesn't want to hear that.
Well, the phone was on silent, which is why I didn't actually hear. Well, it's the same with the BlackBerry and Android. If you put it on silent, the alarm still goes off.
Yeah.
And so that is actually why I didn't hear, you know, like any of these 700 phone calls. from. And it's that thing, too. Do you ever do this where you wake up and it's like you know that you have overslept because you are suspiciously well rested? And you go, oh, I feel great. Oh, crap. And then you just immediately look at the, you know.
My, it is suspiciously bright outside, as if it was mid-afternoon.
And then you pick up the phone, and it's like you almost, especially now, this is a thing that didn't.
27 message. Oh,
right, which is a thing you never had to deal with, you know, growing up, right? It's like the phone would ring, and I guess maybe until you got like one of the early answering machines, you wouldn't know. You missed 1,000 calls. How would you ever know? And you look at your phone, and it's like you have 429 missed calls. And you think, well, okay. And then depending on your job, like let's say if you're this woman, you just say to yourself, I, you know, it's like sometimes you just don't even want to go back in. You just want to like drive by and throw your keys at the building and just be like, I'm sorry, you're going to fire me anyway. Here you go. And just like toss them in with a brick. Let's do one more and we'll do the snack clue, then the top five.
Well, do you want the Corpse Watch or the Clergy Watch?
We should do the Clergy Watch because that has been bumped from yesterday.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, here is your Clergy Watch for, what is it? It's Thursday, is it not?
Yes.
Here's your Clergy Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you. Because I got to have faith.
Here is Don Taylor with your Clergy Watch for Thursday.
The Archdiocese of Milwaukee is filing a petition for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
We should know that this is Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Right. It's broke due to the cost of lawsuits by victims of molestation by priests in recent years. Archbishop Jerome Listecki said they've done everything possible to avoid this.
What is the name of this country?
Milwaukee One.
Milwaukee One. This is one of those things where it's chosen not to label the cuts.
Since 2002, we have sold property, liquidated savings and investments, eliminated ministries and services, cut archdiocesan staff by nearly 40%, and put all available real estate on the market in order to free up resources.
You know, it's like Mr. Potter asking for sympathy, though. That's the thing. It's like, I guess the theory
have
is
have they
that
tried asking the priest to be less rapey?
Pardon me. Are you a pedophile? You could ask that question to young men in seminary, and that might be cheaper.
I think it's that they just didn't care much what the answer was. I think that's more the problem. I know that this is supposed to elicit sympathy, but it's just that's a file not found. Yeah. It's just not coming up. I'm sorry.
Oh, you mean you've had to get rid of some of the vast holdings in real estate and such that your nonprofit organization holds.
Wouldn't you love to see a guy just sort of walking through, you know, St. Peter's Cathedral or something? A guy just strolling through the Vatican with a clipboard, you know, and just marking everything for liquidation. Sort of, we've lost our lease, you know, on the solid gold pillar, all right? And he puts an orange sticker on it.
These candlesticks have got to go.
Yeah.
I can get a pretty penny for these on eBay. Listecki says the Archdiocese has cut staff by 40%, sold property, and more to free up resources.
Over the past 20 years, we have spent more than $29 million to cover costs associated with this tragedy.
You know, that's the softening of the language right there that perhaps does not underscore the actual seriousness of the situation.
Tragedy has come to mean things that are not tragic. Have you noticed that?
Tragedy has become a it has become one of those words like liberty that almost it is used almost solely ironically.
By tragic, do you mean the vast network of crimes against children that you covered up for several generations?
I think you've cracked his code.
No, I think they mean the tragedy that everyone got caught. That was tragic for them.
Okay. Gotcha.
There's your clergy watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I gotta have faith.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Oh, somebody's asking me, it is Thursday, which means yesterday was Wednesday, which means yesterday was ham-fisted radio. Somebody's asking me, what did you do a ham-fisted radio yesterday? I guess they're looking to see if there's something that they should be downloading.
I did not do ham-fisted radio yesterday, but you can download it. Fatboy Roberts was joined by Eric Henriksen.
Oh, okay. From the Mercury
and Jamie Rich.
Okay, so that is at hamfistedradio.com if you would like to download that. We'll do the top five here, just a few. It is the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. And as I mentioned this yesterday, that by definition, I think I used the song Telstar as an example, that it's probably not a thing you were humming, real recently, so it's not a thing by definition that you would have forgotten. So these are fairly recent songs, for it to qualify as something that you have forgotten as opposed to something that you probably never knew to begin with. So we'll do that here in a few. It is the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. Before we do that, we should give clue number one for round number two of Name That Snack, brought to you by EH Vending. And by the way, EH Vending can be contacted at ehvending.com. You can also call them. You can call Josh at 360-816-1853, 360-816-1853. You can call James at 503-897-8204, 503-897-8204. And they can furnish vending equipment for your business. So if you are a manager or decision maker there, and if you have got a vending service right now that you're unhappy with and you want to make sure that you get the next one lined up before you before you sever the contract with the current company, or if you're starting a brand new business and you want to get this lined up, or if you're finding that certain vending businesses and certain vending contractors don't deal with individual standalone offices, or they don't deal with businesses below a certain size, you're not going to have any of those issues with EH Vending. They are flexible, and they'll work with folks of any size, shape, matter, function, or form.
Or maybe you just think it would be fun to buy your own snacks and have it in your house and pay yourself.
As Eric noted yesterday, you could have a vending machine in your home, most likely. So I think we actually suggested that we would have one. I think we talked about putting one in the studio here, just under the theory that because we know our own snack behaviors, so. If the people who come on the show are anything like us, we could probably clear a good $12, $15 a week on that.
Yeah, giving us just a great big giant box full of snacks was a terrible idea. It was a wonderful thing, but really we should have a vending machine and we should be forced to pay for them because otherwise that's just dangerous.
Because the thing is, this requires self-regulation, which is not really strong suit, certainly.
It's a nice psychological test, though, to see what people take from the giant box of snacks.
Maybe we should. Maybe we could make it sort of one of those Psych 101 experiments or something, like an Alan Funt meets the Joy of Learning sort of a deal. Because it's, I mean, really, I hesitate to mention anything that's in here because any of it might come up as as an item on Name That Snack. But I mean, there really is. I have to ask this, since they're gone and therefore unusable, about the Three Musketeer slash. And it's not a Twix spinoff.
No.
We should note that, but it is basically a Twix.
Yeah, it was
knockoff.
Called like a Three Musketeers truffle cookie or truffle crisp or something like that.
But it's the two very thin, narrow crisp bars.
Right. It was essentially like a Twix bar, but instead of caramel, it had the Three Musketeer nougat. And so, so it was like a little shortbread cookie with the Three Musketeers filling, and the whole thing dipped in chocolate.
But was there a cookie?
Yeah, there was the little
okay. So
little
it was
cookie,
okay.
Like
so,
with a Twix.
So it was. So it did have. See, the crispness really. That's what makes the Twix work.
Yeah.
Is it's that? Let me ask you this: have you had the peanut butter Twix?
Oh, yeah.
The peanut butter
good.
Twix is fantastic. That's a thing of sublime, really, because it's the chocolate over peanut butter. And I think a very, very thin layer of caramel, but then over a chocolate cookie inside. And I don't much cotton to the regular Twix, but that, you know, the peanut butter Twix is. You, by adding peanut butter to a candy, you can make it like 500% more attractive
everything.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's like
everything.
The peanut butter M&Ms. The peanut butter M&Ms yeah. are, I mean, and that's another thing where it's like the line extension on the M&Ms has gone crazy in the last few years,
pretzel
too. Because
M&Ms.
The pretzel M&Ms.
I haven't had those yet.
Oh, my God.
The coconut ones are horrible.
The coconut ones aren't very good. The dark chocolate ones are okay. There's the peanut butter M&Ms.
The cherry cordial ones are very good.
They're good if you like the if you like the cherry cordials themselves. They have that same flavor. They taste a little chemically to me. The pretzel M&Ms. Here's what makes the pretzel M&Ms so great is that it's the hint of salt, and that's the thing where sometimes you know I used to ask my mom when she would put salt into cookies. I didn't know why you would do that. And there's lots of reasons you do that, and one of them is just that little zing, just the little tiny tang of the salt afterward. It makes all the difference. I mean, that really is it's a fine thing.
I had people asking me about all the Christmas cookies I made this year, and somebody was like, why are your cookies so good? And I finally told somebody, I said, well, there's a couple of things. One, I'm very texture is very important to me. I think they should be crisp. Most people do kind of soft cookies. And the other thing is, almost every kind of cookie I make, I put a little bit of extra salt in it. Because there's just something, particularly chocolate, just benefits from that extra little bump of salt.
I should take this opportunity to sort of a when worlds collide thing here. So Josh of EH Vending actually just messaged me something I'm related to this, but coincidentally. So Josh from EH Vending, who can be contacted again at ehvending.com or 360-816-1853. He says, Rick, can you find out what's going on the 205 bridges, Gleason and Stark, etc.? Cops are all on the bridges the whole way down. He says, looks like they closed 205 north. So apparently there. So if somebody is aware of what is going on there, or if we had a news person that we knew who could
jump on her phone and
a news
text
organization,
can't talk.
So apparently there's some sort of, and this is just like I don't know, like 90 seconds ago that he asked me this. So he says, looks like they closed 205 north. He says there seems to be cops everywhere. He's now asking. He said, he said it looks like it might be a motorcade of some kind coming through, but it doesn't sound like he's seen one. But he said, apparently, it looks like what they do when a motorcade is sort of ushered through. So we'll get a handle on that and try to figure out what's going on there as soon as possible. All right. So, Dawn Taylor, are you ready? Should we give clue number one?
Clue number one.
So we should say that we are starting round two of Name That Snack. The winner of round number one was Harper Morgan Werner, who correctly identified Fig Newtons based on the following two clues. Manufactured by Nabisco and sweet, not salty. So
that was impressive.
Clue number one for round two. And actually, our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, came up with this clue. So clue number one for this is actually, and I will pound down the bed for this, is actually this is the sound of the bag being opened and of the item being chewed by me, Rick Emerson. So, all right, so I'm opening the bag right now. All right, and.
Okay.
And I gotta say, first of all, just having heard it myself in my own ears right now, I think that's almost enough to guess what this is.
Almost.
Because I don't think there's – the only thing I'll say, this is not even really another clue. I'm just going to say I don't think that there's anything that makes this particular sound. I don't think this – I mean, from my money, I like to think that I would be able to identify this based on this. I mean, this is a very distinct sound. Mm-hmm. Hold on, one more time. All right, there we go. So that is clue number one for round number two of Name That Snack here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
That was nasty.
There was the look on your face right now. I cannot even convey
the
how off-putting.
The sound of a raccoon breastfeeding is what that was.
It is the...
Oh, now you gave it away.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're here with Anna Griffin from the Oregonian and Don Taylor at the News Desk. Don't forget, joining us tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Let us do, Don, one more story, and then we will do today's top five, and then we'll skedaddle on out of here. Here is Don Taylor at the News Desk.
A gunman who tried to rob a Milwaukee, Wisconsin grocery was subdued when a customer hit him with a pickle jar. Lugman Assad told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel he was eating lunch in the back of the L&A food market around 3 p.m. Tuesday when he came out and saw a man pointing a gun at the head of his son, Wissam, the store owner. Assad said he grabbed the gun from the man as he fired a shot. Three or four customers who were in the store at the time jumped on the gunman and one hit him with a pickle jar. The man was arrested at the scene.
When I used to work at the 7-Eleven, I would actually, the other employees and I would actually discuss occasionally if you had to, like, sort of fight off, you know, like a robber, some sort of criminal, you know, like hand to hand, if you had to use something as an implement, was there anything, you know, that you sold at the store that could be used as some sort of a bludgeon? And we could never really come up with anything that seemed sufficiently hefty. You know, all we could ever come up with is trying to get like a carton of cigarettes to like poke him in the eye or something. Now there's any number of things that they sell behind the counter. You got your track phone, for example, that you could use just to beat on a guy. But this was at like an actual supermarket or is a convenience store?
It was a grocery, so I think it was probably one
like
of those
corner markets,
the small little corner markets.
All right,
yeah.
So without further ado, ladies and gentlefolk, here is your top five for Thursday
five,
on the Rick
four,
Emerson Radio Program.
3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
Let me just say this, the whole business of doing the Name That Snack contest actually reminded me of something. Do you remember right before, I guess it would have been before Thanksgiving, possibly before Christmas, but I think it was before Thanksgiving, that Cheryl brought in the Cinnabon-flavored candy canes?
Oh God, yes.
Which are actually still back here.
Well, of course they are because they're
horrible.
Because
nobody wants them. That was, I think, the same day that I brought in a bunch of things from the vending machine at the CW, including the Burger King cheesy fries snack.
Yeah. That smelled and tasted like a dusty furniture store.
But, you know, and then we had the Chicharinos, I think, that were in there. Mm-hmm. But we were noting that the vending machine, and none of these things, by the way, will be on Name That Snack. These are all just things. We noted that the vending machine at the CW had the strangest varieties of food, including these, Don. This is a brand of potato chip I've never heard, and they are called California chips. And these are... We've reached some sort of event horizon where we no longer name the flavors of things with anything that actually is descriptive of the flavor itself. That's why you have, like, Arctic-flavored Gatorade, which means, like, nothing. No. So these are, in fact, earthquake-flavored potato chips.
Well, that...
And it seems like...
Let me see that.
They taste like cement dust and glass in your face?
And I know that that's the name of the flavor because I went online and I've seen other... California Chips is the name of the brand. And they have a whole line of potato chips. But those are the earthquake flavor. And so I really have no idea what that refers to. Unless it's like an extra sort of a thickness or an extra sort of a seasoning or something.
Well, it says on the back, you can't think of California without thinking about earthquakes. It says, but earthquake-flavored potato chips? A perfect blend of all our flavors shaken into one.
I see.
We thank you for buying this product, Kevin Holden, founder.
Does it specify what all of the other flavors are?
No. I think you just have to
assume your regular
chances.
It's like a grown-up version of when you get a snow cone and it's mixed together and you call it a graveyard.
Exactly.
That's how disgusting and clever. And Dawn is opening the package.
Oh, wow. That is just unpleasant.
Would you say that it smells better or worse than the furniture store Burger King snack?
The thing is, there's obviously the vinegar flavor in there, along with probably like barbecue
and hints of amaretto
and ranch or something. So it all, honest to God, it smells like a cat box. It just smells like a dirty cat
How
box.
How appetizing.
By the way, we should note again that this is in no way associated with EH vending. This
the
is actually
vinegar,
something else altogether.
The vinegar overwhelms it, but it does not smell real.
Well,
That just doesn't smell like anything you would ever want to put in your mouth,
all
ever.
Right. I'm closing that up, and we're just putting that. I'm going to dispose of this.
Yeah, make it
today.
Clear that this was from a completely different vending machine than E.H. Vending. Nothing in our fine, fine box full of snacks from E.H. Vending is horrible
let's be honest, who's to say? Clearly this is a product for which a market must exist, because I was looking online and it's like it's sold everywhere and apparently has been around for some time. So
okay, give me those.
There are earthquake potato chip enthusiasts in this world. They walk among us.
All right, somebody has to do this.
Oh,
I find the vinegar chips off-putting just in general, so anything that's like that is going to be a thing I probably don't care for.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. It's like, I think there's barbecue and the vinegar.
Sour cream and onion?
I swear to God, sour cream and onion.
Yeah, no, that makes
all
sense.
All together, and it's just...
Well, they must have, I mean...
It's not as horrible as I thought it would be. It's not nearly as horrible as those Burger King cheesy fries.
No, nothing is as horrible as the Burger King cheesy fries. They must have just figured, though, you know, that, as you said, that we have invented all of the flavors we're ever going to invent.
Yeah.
So now all that's left to us is just various combinations of the above. And by the way, I should say that it's not like we would sort of blindly just be enthusiasts of something that happened to be put in a machine by E.H. Vending. Not everything is to everybody's taste. The Burger King cheesy fries, though, were uniquely horrible.
Yeah.
There was an otherworldly polymer-like taste.
What I don't get is, I mean, Burger King doesn't actually make real cheesy fries,
right?
Do they?
That was the thing. That was my first question, is this is mimicking a menu item which does not exist.
They might now, though, because I know Jack in the Box now has cheese fries.
Or maybe how about this? Maybe the cheese fries are actually coming out. Maybe it's a thing that they are going to unveil. And so this is, they are softening up the ground, as they say, by releasing this snack. Or that it's a regional thing that they sell at certain Burger Kings. All right. Here is Dawn Taylor with today's top five.
So, once again,
these are the
once inescapable songs you've probably forgotten.
These are the top five once inescapable songs, and by definition, recent songs because of that. Top five once inescapable songs that you have probably forgotten. So the Macarena, not on the list because once inescapable, we don't really play it now, but it stays with you every day like a bad childhood memory.
Oh, God, this first one.
Oh, they're all bad.
Oh, yeah, but this one in particular. Honorable mention, Terrence Trent D'Arby, Wishing Well.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
See, and you'd forgot right until I handed you the list. I mean, it's not like if I'd mentioned the song, you wouldn't have known it, but you never would have come up with this. You wouldn't have, you know, come out with this on your own.
But yeah, you're right. It was once inescapable.
Yeah.
You would hear this five or six times a day, no matter where you went.
And it was on MTV. And this was like after the point where MTV only had five or six videos to play. They would just... And there's that weird little like... That weird like little... it's like a Japanese flute, like a sort of like a that weird water flute sound in the background. That's sort of the hook, is that sound. It's not even the melody, it's that noise.
I never understood the attraction here, the appeal of Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Now, my theory is, because this would have been what year, Don?
Mid-80s, 87?
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
My theory is that this was when, in mainstream culture, this was when hip-hop was ascendant, and I believe this was a sort of, look, white people, not all has gone crazy in your world. Here's some unthreatening music you can listen to. Because hip-hop was at that point, you know, that was when it was starting to permeate the white mainstream, and there was a lot of, like, you know, it was going to corrupt your children, and it was thugs and criminals and gangsters, and it was deeply unnerving, and they said, my God, it's a world, whatever happened to Sam Cooke? The world has gone topsy-turvy on. And so then a record company somewhere went, get a black guy who does something that's not rap.
Look at him. He's got dreadlocks and blue eyes.
But he's singing. You know, he's singing, and there are instruments in the song, and so therefore it is okay for white people to listen to it.
And then we got this little part with a flute that sounds like we're on our way to a puppet show.
And here's the other thing about Terrence Trent D'Arby. Not unlike some of you old schoolers, if you remember the hip hop artist Lucas. The thing about Terrence Trent D'Arby is that he also seemed kind of deep in a hard to identify way. Like, in a sort of vague sense that couldn't be quantified, it seemed like he was sort of smart and like a little... He was sort of mystical in some strange... Not unlike P.M. Dawn, Whitey. Which is like sort of the same reason why if you go... I think this is actually on that list of the stuff that white people like. If you go to any white person's house, like any white male between the ages of 32 and 40 will own something by Mos Def or by Del the Funky Homo Sapien. And he'll tell you that it's because, like, it's really deep and the lyrics are really amazing if you look at it. It's like his wordplay. There's nothing that white people love more than really complex or jazzy or socially uplifting rap music. White people cannot get enough of that. But that's my theory here, is that this was a thing put out to sort of calm the white waves of terror.
You know, it's funny, because I was driving over here in an Oregonian vehicle, says Oregonian on the side, and at a stoplight looked up and realized that I was listening to Kanye West and sort of screaming about my penis out loud in this Oregonian vehicle. And that's not really professional. In my Subaru, it's fine. But
it's not professional. It is awesome, though. I have no doubts about that. All right, these are the top five songs that were once inescapable about which you may have forgotten. Dawn Taylor?
Number five, Maxi Priest, Close to You.
By the way, it was a toss-up here because Maxi Priest, Close to You, the two songs, do you remember the two songs in your head that are, I mean, you can tell them apart, but they are linked somehow. They're two things. The one makes you think of the other all the time. For example, that song Unbelievable by EMF always makes me think of the song Right Here, Right Now by Jesus Jones. I don't know why, but the two are somehow joined in my head. The song that's joined with Maxi Priest is that song by that Back to Life, Back to Reality song by Soul to Soul.
I can see that.
Having worked at Top 40 Radio in like 1990, 1991, it seems like I had to play this all the time. And maybe I did, maybe it's like some retrospective horror that I'm fabricating, but it seems like I had to play this constantly. Maxi Priest, by the way, is one of those things where I'm not clear if that's the name of the guy or if it's the name of a sort of collective. I think it may have been the large dreadlocked man that
can
was
we agree
the
it's actually
for.
No one's name?
Yeah, no.
When it comes to birth certificate time.
I have to say that my Maxi Priest knowledge is perhaps not as expansive as some's. I think it's my Maxi Priest knowledge is right there with my Chardet knowledge.
Maximilian Priestberg. Wow.
It's like you can just see an episode of Silk Stockings playing over the top of this. I want to find that guy from Silk Stockings and interview him, see what he's up to.
Rob Estes, is that his name?
I think so.
And his wife was on Melrose Place. It's all coming back to me now.
It's like long nights of watching the USA Network. All right. These are the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. Improbably, we are only at number five. Now at number four, Dawn Taylor.
Number four is Fastball, The Way.
And by the way, if you don't remember Fastball, you do because it's that band that everybody made the same comment about, which is, hey, this guy sounds a lot like Elvis Costello.
Oh, yeah, this song. I like this song.
Yeah, it's not a bad song. It's just a thing that they had their moment. The other song that they had, actually, there was a follow-up to this, which was Over My Head, was the follow-up single. And it's like the guy, just his phrasing, not unlike how Jesse Cadison just sounded like Elton John, the phrasing in the guy, his sort of inflections that he used, some of his wordplay. Had a very Elvis Costello feel to it. But the problem with any band that sounds a lot like another band or an artist who sings like somebody else is that that burns out really quickly. Because then because you'll accept that for the first album. You go, hey, he sounds a lot like Elvis Costello, and I've been waiting for a new Elvis Costello record, but one hasn't been forthcoming. This has solved my problems in the interim. But then when the second record comes out, and the guy sounds exactly the same, you realize, oh, he's just a guy who sounds just like Elvis, because it wasn't an interesting sort of, you know, novelty in his oeuvre, so I'm done listening to him now.
Well, this is another one of the songs, too, like Weezer's The Sweater Song, that got just so much radio play, like, all of the time. And you think, this is fun. This is a fun song. I like this song. But it never actually, like, you know, and I know there are a lot of people who are really huge Weezer fans, but me personally, I have the same reaction with Weezer that I had with these guys. I never bothered to go follow up and see what else they had to offer.
Well, because it's, I think you know subconsciously when something is sort of, and I really don't mean this as an insult. I don't mean this in a pejorative sense because there's a place for this. But you know when something is just sort of a disposable pop song,
yeah,
or you know, or a standalone pop song, or a thing that probably doesn't go a lot deeper on the record. You know, a lot of bubblegum records are like that, where you hear like 1, 2, 3 Red Light, and you go, this probably isn't a concept album in the works from them at any point. This is about as far as this band goes. This came out right as Lara and I had moved to San Diego, and she was a huge fan of this album and listened to it all the time. But then there did seem to be just some day where the ripcord was pulled, and I think it was just like never played again. I don't think she's played it since we moved to Portland. By the way, it's another one of those songs, too, that is upbeat and jaunty and fun and is apparently about something awful, because I think it's about an elderly couple, based on a real story, about an elderly couple who were found, like, dead in their car, like, in a canyon somewhere, and it's because they were old and had become disoriented and lost and, like, died in the Mojave Desert or something. And he read it and he thought, well, that would make an upbeat song, and so here you go. Anyone could see the road. All right. These are the top 5 once-inescapable songs about which you may have forgotten. Don Taylor, what's next?
Number 3 is Dishwalla, Counting Blue Cars.
Oh, I hate this song.
Yeah.
I've always hated this song.
I hate this song so much I'm going to actually leave the room while it's playing.
Good for you. I admire your principle. Are we moving blue cars?
We're moving blue cars.
By the way, I came up with that the joke right there. That was an ad hoc little thing I said right there. Dawn is parked in a spot from which she would be towed if she were there after 4 o'clock, which has already happened once once in the last 6 months. So. This is from that mid-90s, like, weird alt era. And not unlike Terrence Trent D'Arby, it was a lot of things that sounded like they were really significant or about something sort of serious.
When you're in your car in traffic, not really paying attention.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you are perhaps 19, and you're, like, in your first creative writing class at college.
So deep.
Really. Whoa. And it was post-Nirvana when we had sort of been trained to think of, you know, because Nirvana came after the, you know, a lot of, you know, the Poison and Bon Jovi. And so Nirvana ushered in this era where music meant a lot more. It was serious.
Music is deep again, yes.
It was art.
A message.
Right. And so you'd hear this and you'd say to yourself, because it has the phrase like the tell me all your thoughts on God. And so therefore, meaning. It has gravitas.
You know, when you say God, it doesn't necessarily make it deep.
No.
Turns out. The sun broke free of the clouds. This is one of those that I don't actually think I've ever listened to the song all the way through.
No, because you hear it, and it's like, is it like a reflex test to see how fast you can reach the radio?
It really is, yes. And it was, this is another one that was on the radio 8
Always.
Times, every hour,
Always.
At a certain time.
I just, we were talking about songs being linked before this, Dishwalla. And what the hell is Dishwalla? What is that? What does it even mean? I'm not saying that everything has to mean, look, Merzidoch doesn't really mean anything, I get that, but it's like Dishwalla is just a... That is a name for a band that would... That is, only an alternative band, only an alt-rock band would be named Dishwalla.
Well, it's like Maxi Priest. Okay, I get... There's something going on there. Fastball. Okay, that's a little obvious, but okay. Dishwalla is just... You're just making stuff up now.
That's right. That was sort of like they just took a bunch of Scrabble tiles. They were just playing Boggle. And as well, I guess this
Squizblick.
Is
Squizblick. No. That's...
I totally want to form a band called Squizblick now just because of that. I want to register squizblick.com. It's going to be my Anna Griffin fan site. Wow. For some reason, this song is always linked in my head with Third Eye Blind because there's that whole, like, that semi-Charmed Life song that came out around the same time. And again,
And that was about crystal meth, right?
It was about crystal meth. Again, another happy song about something terrible. Wait, these guys have so much pep. They seem really energetic.
It seems like something I should try.
They're really perky for some reason. All this energy. Well, and I think Third Eye Blind's follow-up song was about a guy committing suicide by jumping off a building. It was the song, and I think it was called Jump or Jumper or something. And it was like about a guy hurling himself off a high-rise.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-
You really are one of our favorite people. There's just no getting around that.
I feel like I'm pulling my own weight today. I feel like with the raccoons, I've...
That's like, yeah, like, you had like four in a row there. Wow. All right. You really missed some gold.
Damn,
from...
We sang. It was great.
We sang, we danced, we laughed. Good God.
Once again, we prove I'm not necessary for this podcast.
Well... You know, look, I mean, you know, if this morning is any indication, I mean, you'll probably get the chance to do the show, like, entirely by yourself at some point in the near future, so.
Yeah, at least I was here.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. These are the top five once inescapable songs about which you may have forgotten. That was just Walla Kids at number three. Dawn Taylor, where are we on the big countdown?
Number two, Deep Blue Something, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh. Full disclosure, I love this song. I have nothing bad to say about this song at all. Now, there was a whole thing that happened with this song, the whole Who's On First thing that would happen, because I was not a music DJ at this point, but I worked next to a Hot AC radio station, an adult contemporary station. And Hot AC means it's soft rock for old people who can't admit that they're listening to soft rock. And so this song would get played, the request lines would light up. My friend Al would answer the phone. He'd go, "Hey, B93," and they'd say, "Hey, who sings this song?" And he would say, "Deep Blue Something." And then they'd say, "No, who? Deep Blue Something." "Well, Deep Blue what? Deep Blue Something." And then it would just be like, and that happened like 1,000 times a day.
I like this song. I mean, I really liked it when it first came out. But it is one of those songs that just it evokes a certain time.
Yeah.
And you take it out of that context. And it loses some charm.
Well, or...
It feels like I should be watching Party of Five.
Everybody should be watching Party of Five. You're really right about that when you... Because they say that your smell is the sense that is most linked to memory. But I think music is, like, right there. Music follows right after that. And it takes you back to a certain time, but removed from the context is not quite as good. For me, a lot of these songs also evoke a time that I just really want to forget. Just a time that is just, that was not even necessarily bad. Just a time that was very tumultuous. And you think, I'd rather not think about that era of my life. And all of the songs sort of, will bring that back. It is one of those songs that you knew instantly, though, could have no follow-up. Because it's referencing, the movie. And it's got like a, and it's got this production style, which is not very interesting. And if replicated, would probably become tedious pretty quickly.
And I think that's sort of a common element of most of these songs. There's a certain something about them that the first few times you listen to them, they sound cool, but then there's a certain vanilla aspect to them after a while.
And it's like the funny or quirky, see Weezer, and I really do like Weezer, but quirky becomes cloying, becomes irritating pretty quickly with some bands. I mean, Weezer is really one of the only bands that they do this sort of, like the smirk rock. They're one of the only bands that does that I can listen to and not be filled with anger after a while. I really like Weezer a lot. you got Weezer who can do that. They're the exception. But you bring on like your Too Much Joy, your Bare Naked Ladies, your They Might Be Giants, and it's like at three songs in and I'm like, I can't listen to this anymore. You got to give me somebody who didn't go to college because I can't hear any more of this. There was a time, by the way, my friend Todd and I, we were songwriting partners for a while, and we would just we cranked out any number of not bad, but any number of forgettable pop songs of our own. But there was this time where we had decided that this was the greatest pop song of the late 20th century. I don't know what we were thinking, because I still like it, but I've revised my opinion somewhat. But we were like, this is the greatest pop song of the last 25 years. And we had decided that everything we wrote was going to be modeled on Breakfast at Tiffany's by Deep Blue Something, which saying it out loud sounds even more absurd.
Gave me a couple Zimas, I would feel that way.
These are the... is Zima is that a drink of choice for you?
I just know. It's just like that's the period of time.
I didn't know, because you still see that occasionally on the shelf, and you say, "Who drinks that?"
Who drinks
and I thought
that?
The answer might be.
It's like.
Have you seen Have you seen the new drink from Tab is made by Coca-Cola, but it's sort of it's like an ancillary company. It's like a Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola Drinks LLC or something. It's like a separate part of the company. Have you seen the new drink that they put out? First, they tried to remarket Tab as an energy drink, where it came in the tiny little small Red Bull like cylinder. So they tried remarketing Tab as an energy drink, which didn't really work. They didn't change it. It was just the same crap in like the small can. The new energy drink that is made by that wing of the Coca-Cola company is, I swear to God, it's another small pink canned energy drink for women called Go Girl.
Aww.
And it's like you see it and it's like – and even I with my penis, I feel offended for my sisters. Aww. I just say, really? Is this what Betty Friedan brought us?
I'm just impressed that nobody has thought to name a tampon that early, that it's just an energy drink. They're slapping that on.
Or that funnel for when you're camping.
I'm going to write that down. That's money in the bank.
I will say, if you could guarantee me I would not get cancer from Tab, I would be drinking that stuff like water.
Or is it like...
Love Tab.
Well, Tab was great because...
Tab?
Well, Tab was...
Diet Coke?
Diet Coke. Yeah. And the thing is, they came out with Diet Coke, but Diet Coke didn't taste anything like Coke. Tab actually had like that nutmeggy, spicy flavor that Coke had, except the problem being that it was sweetened with saccharin. So it had this really, really nasty, bitter aftertaste. But then, you know, Diet Coke, which wasn't as harsh, but it also didn't taste like Coke. It wasn't until...
its own thing.
Yeah, it wasn't until they came out with Coke Zero that there was actually a diet version of Coke that tasted like Coke.
So, but you find it, but now is Tab a drink? Because it's funny about, here's the thing about Diet Coke, is that Diet Coke has a strange hold on people like no soft drink I have ever seen in my life. I mean, and I know people who drink a lot of Pepsi or they drink a lot of Coke or they drink a lot of whatever. But I have never seen, and I'm not talking about like if you leave energy drinks out of it. I mean, if you just like regular sodas, I have never, with the exception of Mountain Dew, I have never seen a soda that has such a strange hold on people as Diet Coke, which of course leads to any number of like lunatic, you know, like late night conspiracy theory peckings online. But there is something weird about Diet Coke and the way that people will drink pallets of it.
I love a Diet Coke.
Yeah. And well, and so Tab, it sounds like is, I don't think I've ever actually had a Tab.
It fell from popularity when they started putting like Splenda and stuff in sodas, and Tab still had saccharin.
You mean I can drink a diet drink and not get cancer? Okay, yeah. Let's do that.
Well, the interesting thing about Diet Coke, and this is an experiment that you can try yourself at home, Diet Coke has this weird ability that it can morph itself into the flavor of anything you add to it. So if you want to like cut back on calories and you stop at like the 7-Eleven where you make your own soda, but you say you want like root beer, you can actually pour yourself a soda that is like 5/6 Diet Coke and then just put an inch of root beer in it.
And it absorbs the flavor and
the whole
replicates.
Thing tastes like root beer.
Wow.
You could do it with orange soda. I would say don't look at it afterwards because it looks disgusting. But you do it with orange soda. You can do it with root beer. You can do it with any other flavor. If you add it to the Diet Coke, yeah, the Diet Coke will just magically become an entire cup of whatever you've added to it.
So it's like the Polyjuice potion of the soda world.
If you drink a Diet Coke without mixing it, I mean, there is definitely that the sort of metallic-y aftertaste, and I find I enjoy that at this point.
Well, who drinks a lot of Tab is Bill Gates. Bill Gates loves Tab,
and it's probably the only reason it's still on the market.
I mean, well, that's and it's because people do well. It's like, you know, it's like people who drink tonic water or something, which is, you know, not a thing. I mean, which has quinine in it, which is very bitter. But, you know, I know people who really enjoy that. So there is, for every, like, strange metallic-y taste, there is an Anna Griffin who says, no, that's what I like about it.
It's like we're back in the furries conversation. There is something for every taste.
There really is. No, we are now in a niche-casting society. Tab I always associate with the late 70s, early 80s, not like Pepsi Free, which came in that weird powder blue can with a lemon on the front, and Fresca.
And it was good. That Pepsi Free or Pepsi Light or whatever it was, yeah, it had it wasn't completely sugar free. It had like half the calories or half the sugar, and it had lemon.
It had lemon, yeah.
And it was not that fake pledge tasting lemon, but actual lemon juice tasting lemon. It was really delicious.
And it had in a sort of retro now kind of way. It had a very pretty can. I liked the can. Yeah. I remember making this. I had two soda faux pas in a row with my dad. I remember at one point noting that I thought the Pepsi Free can was pretty.
It was the same time you were eating the big pink snowballs from the store, and so he thought you were gay.
That's not a euphemism, or is it? It's not. I had the, but I was talking about the snowballs, and he would not, and he wanted to be, as I said the other day, that he didn't think snowballs were, you know, were a boy's food, and so he wanted me to have, I swear to God, he wanted me to put Twinkies in my mouth. But I love the powder blue because my sister drank a Pepsi Free, and I was just like, that's like a really pretty can. And he was just, he would just take it away from me and angrily throw it in the trash. But then I remember saying that I, at one point, that I wanted a Fresca, and I don't think I'd ever had it, but I think I'd seen an ad for it, and it had a cool sounding name. And I think it's because it's like Fresca is a really cool word. It just has that great, like, the open vowel sound at the beginning, and then the explosive
really
CA.
Really nice branding by someone.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's such a great, great name. I don't know if they still make that as a soda.
I think they do.
Because it's Italian, isn't it? It's for fresh, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
But it's a great, great name. It's like, it's such a great name, you almost wish that you could put it on another product and have it be more successful because it sounds so great.
And it's grapefruit flavored. Nothing else tastes like that.
Yeah. And I remember telling my dad one time that I saw it on TV or something, and I said I wanted a Fresca. Like, he's going to the store. He's like, well, do you want a soda or something, son? And it's like, I said I wanted a Fresca. And he, I swear to God, again, he's like, that's not for boys.
Would you like a tutu with that?
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, how did he get it in his head that, like, that's not for boys? Like, that's just a weird, very, binary, you know.
It was marketed as a ladies' diet soda, yes.
Was it like women playing tennis or something and then pausing to refresh themselves with it? Okay, well, that explains it. So, anyway, so you are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. These are the top five once inescapable songs about which you have probably forgotten. Don Taylor, what might number one be?
Number one would be Donna Lewis, I Love You Always Forever.
I bought the single for this song. And this may be one of the last singles that I ever purchased. I'm trying to remember if it was the last single that I ever owned, but I think it would have been after cassettes. So it's, I quit buying singles at a certain point because I realized that I was being horked. Just like when I quit buying import versions of things for the most part because you realize that that's just them charging you $40 for the same Pearl Jam record. I bought the single of this, and to use the you know, the snack food analogy again, it was like a piece of gum that's really great, and then about 10 minutes later you go, the flavor's gone, and now it's kind of disgusting. And I don't think she ever had a follow-up to this. I don't think they even tried to follow it up. It makes you wonder, when you hear, if you have forgotten the song, it'll all come back to you when you hear the hook. It makes you wonder why they even bothered recording a full album, you know? Like, why they and here's the thing. They had to have known that this would be her only hit. And here's how they knew. If you look at the full-length version of the album, if you look at the Donna Lewis, the LP, as we used to say, this song is on there twice. There's this version, and then there's like a remix that
there's
closes
like
the
album. 8-minute version.
Exactly.
Of it.
The club mix.
Yeah.
And that's how they knew. Some A&R guy was like, look, she's never going to have another single, so let's just get every drop out of this we can.
Record this one, and then add some drums, and then take her out back and shoot her.
You just went a little Peter Carlin on us right there. Just out of the blue, just something horrible and great. Well done. Doesn't it seem like this ought to be used this, like in a credit card commercial or something? Or
I have the montage is going through my head of what this could be, yeah.
Or like maybe, I don't know, for like a cruise line or something, and it would be like, you know, some couple enjoying their second honeymoon.
Well, there was a one Enya song that was used for Carnival Cruise.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I ever heard it.
Orinoco Flow.
And I was very surprised when I heard it on the radio and discovered it was an actual song. I thought it was just...
This wasn't just some advertising. This wasn't made up for...
I thought it was just background music on a cruise line commercial.
That's one of those songs, too, that Sail Away, the Orinoco Flow song by Enya, that was used on... And like 700 commercials. And that was probably the best use of it. But it was like you would just, it just became, well, it's like you know, I've been talking about, catching up on House lately. It's like how, that the House theme is no longer like a song, because that's a song by Massive Attack. But I can no longer listen to it as a Massive Attack song. You just have to sort of skip by it. I did really, really love this song, and I got to say that even now I can't really enjoy it because it's like the fuse has been burned out, that light bulb has gone dead. But it's a really, really perfectly constructed pop song. I mean, it's really, really well done. But at the same time, you hear and you understand why we couldn't listen to it as a society for more than about a month. And a proof of that, I think, is that you don't really hear it on the radio now. If you listen to, like, you know, The Buzz or something, like a station that would play this, even they know that it's going to take another 100 years. It's like, this song is like Marie Curie's notebooks. It's going to be a while before they're accessible and enjoyable by anybody.
Somebody's going to use it someday in a montage.
Yeah.
In some sort of, like, romantic comedy. And it's going to come back.
Probably.
This is one of those songs, though, that you hear at, like, 2 o'clock in the morning on Kink. Like, in between like John Tesh songs and stuff that's nothing but like pan flute.
It's just like whale song.
Yeah.
It's like they're always like just a music for the heart of space thing happening. The thing about Kink is sometimes you would wonder if it's I shouldn't be piling on. This is the wrong month to make fun of Kink. I feel bad even doing it because I like those guys and it's you know.
Are they having issues?
Yeah, there's been some revising of the staff list over there. They've had some reversals lately, and some folks have we're wishing well to many people in their future endeavors. But I don't mean to sound snarky when I say that. If I'm snarking, it really is just at radio and not at like at like Sean Martin or at Dennis Constantine or any of the guys who I have known a lot of the people at Kink for a long time, and it's and still doing. It's a great station and whatever, but it's what they call a heritage station. It really is a part of the cultural fabric, but it's a great part of Portland. But there are a lot of things about Kink that are just that are just so weird and so unique to that station. We always used to refer to them as living on Planet Kink because like they never had to follow any of the rules that any of the other stations had to follow at CBS. They had their own version. They were in a building apart from everybody else. Everybody was in one building, you know, for that except for Kink. They were always like in their own, like literally behind. An electronically sealed, secure, like bulletproof glass door that you had to get to. And anyway, but it's like you would just turn on Kink at like 2 in the morning and you were unsure about whether it was some sort of music or whether somebody had just like left the transmitter on and it was just like a dull hum, you know, coming from the control board. Like it was, you know.
Well, I used to listen to Kink in my car all the time because it, you know, was a kind of a nice, mellow, adult rock and roll kind of a thing. Except that I had to stop listening to it when I worked at Starbucks because I would get off work at Starbucks at like 11:30 and I'd turn on the radio and be driving home and I'm exhausted after having been on my feet for like 10 hours and they're playing that damn Lights Out thing.
Right.
And I'm trying to drive home from work and I'm just so tired I can barely keep my eyes on. And it's just all this, you know, atmospheric stuff to soothe you and put you to sleep. And it was horrible.
And it just sounds like a microwave running in the background. Sort of a, and you're going to go, okay. It's where it's like you're either listening to like an Andrew Bird recording or someone is just vacuuming one room over and they've left. And the other thing about work, and I was just going to say, in working at Starbucks, let's be honest, you hear the Kink playlist all day at Starbucks.
Yeah,
how much Ryan Adams can you really listen to, you know, before you just got to kill yourself? All right. Well, there we go. So there's your time. God damn, this has been a long, well, I guess it had to be a long show today to sort of compensate for my hideous failure early in the morning.
That's right. See, you're
getting here, Don.
You're at least an hour behind.
Yeah.
Where you normally would be today.
The best part is that Cheryl has been waiting in the kitchen for 15 minutes to talk to me. So so that's good. So I'm making everybody wait for me today.
Oh, by the way, Donna said that if we want to take our Christmas tree down, today would be no rush. But today would be a good time because today's the day that the dumpster is.
Hey, you know, it's actually in my, no lie, it is in my at a glance planner to do this evening. Because I'm going to do the one here and I'm going to do the one at home all in one fell swoop. Because I had to wait for, because those are all Cheryl's ornaments.
Mm.
Those do not belong to me. So yeah, I'm all over it, baby.
Okay.
All right. Anna Griffin, this Saturday, the crazy woman who you were not this woman.
Coyotes.
You will be discussing feeding coyotes
animals, wildlife.
And in that story, the reference to the woman who
there might be one.
Do
or
you
two.
Reference that in the article itself?
We'll see what I can get away with.
Okay, because I was just realizing. I wonder if that was the thing you actually just share with us now that the Oregonian decided wasn't fit for family consumption.
We will find out. I think it's all in the phrasing.
Right now, there's an editor looking at it, and he's got the pencil in his hand.
There's an editor with her hand over her chest, thinking.
I don't know about this. Do we have another word for suckle? Anyone? All right. Tomorrow, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here, and we'll have your second clue for Name That Snack. We want to thank our guests, including Ms. Anna Griffin. You can read her in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Millpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for listening. Be safe. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye now.